I'd like to acknowledge that this statement, for assistance with this statement from Lorna Pitt, Winston McCackie, Lorna and Bill Hannon and Janet Belitho. Mike was the first mayor of the city of Moreland in 1996, founding member of the Victorian Local Government Association and its CEO for 9 years. He was board member of the EPA, Sustainability Victoria, the Natural Resources Conservation League, and was also key to the establishment of the Moreland Energy Foundation. Through these roles, he contributed greatly to a range of activities important to the City of Melbourne. In particular, he was the architect of the Victorian Local Sustainability Accord, and this embodied what Mike was all about and why I, like other people in the environment, other people involved in environmental issues at local government, saw him as a mentor and a true sustainability leader. The accord was about state government and its agencies working with local government to aggregate and amplify moves towards environmental sustainability, social justice and action on climate change. The Growing Green Guide, an award-winning piece of collaborative work towards accelerated greening in cities, is a legacy of this work. His passion for the role of local government should and must play on the national and local agenda. National and global agenda saw him collaborate across the political spectrum to achieve many things that many who get stuck in party politics never can. He was a life member of the ALP, but at today's celebration, you had the broad spectrum of politics there. His ability to be a team builder and forward thinker is remembered by Bill and Lorna Hannon as beginning as a teacher with them from the mid-60s in high schools in Flemington and Moreland, and they both saw a determination to lead students towards responsibility and self-governance. In closing, I want to point out that there's actually a very personal connection to the City of Melbourne and our Town Hall for Mike and his life partner, Lorna Pitt. Lorna was a councillor here for almost 10 years. And they first met here 27 years ago in Committee Room 3, where the City of Melbourne invited the Brunswick Council to meet to discuss the saving of the Upfield line. Today, Lorna thanked Snappy Tom, as she said, for this issue that arose. Their partnership and joint passion for understanding and championing the inextricable and interdependent links between a city's excellent public infrastructure, healthy environment, social justice, strong economies, and quality of life is a vision that has led to many award-winning initiatives in Melbourne and Moreland, and may this continue to be the case. Thank you. Now hand back to the Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. The agenda comprises 4 reports from management and 1 item of general business. No apologies have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes the decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the meeting 85 minutes held on the 19th of July 2016? Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor, I'll put that matter, all those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? In that case, as at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Melbourne Metro Rail Project, proposed acquisition and early occupation of the City Square, a request to speak from Jeff Leach, an item of correspondence from Jeff Leach. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, opportunities for Elizabeth Street South, a request to speak from Leslie Berger, items of correspondence from Leslie Berger and Michael Hetman. In relation to item 6.3, Planning Scheme Amendment C190, Arden McCauley, requests to speak from Yvonne Erickson, Paul Pace, Bruce Anderson, Paul McAlpin, Peter Sweeney, Sotirios Katsatsakous, John Widmer, Kay Oddie, Rilke Muir, Enid Hookey, Rob McGoran and Jeff Leach, and items of correspondence from Angela Williams, Yvonne Erickson, Paul Pace, Bruce Anderson, Paul McAlpin, Peter Sweeney, Sotirios Katakouzinos, Kay Oddie, Rilke Muir, Enid Hookey, Justin Flanagan, Lynn Dang, Rob McGoran and Jeff Leach. In Agenda Item 6.4, the completion of the Future Melbourne 2026 Plan, requests to speak from Lisa Adams, Heath Davies and Nico Kuntz, all members of the Citizens' Jury. And in relation to Agenda Item 7.1, post-travel report by Councillor Jackie Watts, Yangon, Myanmar, July 2016, a request to speak from Christopher Lamb, an item of correspondence from Christopher Lamb. I just tell submitters that you have 3 minutes to address the committee at the time the agenda item is considered. We adhere to that 3-minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind me. Beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, telling you you have 1 minute remaining to conclude. A final beep sounds to signal that the time allocated to you has concluded. In accordance with the Council resolution of the 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of our meetings for members of the public to ask us questions. Questions may not be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and this is not the time to make submissions. Submitters are invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. Would anyone like to ask us a question? Thank you. Chris.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. My question is in regards to it's been drawn to my attention that just recently there's been a ban on amplified musicianship on Swanson Street, and due to complaints, noise complaints in the past 3 years. My question relates to the fact that the vibrancy and energy and passion that is delivered to the City of Melbourne by the musicians is greatly appreciated by many people, and the petition has already gathered almost 10,000 signatures in a couple of days to indicate the strong support that musicians have playing amplified music. And I do respect management and City of Melbourne's policy approach in regards to Melbourne Music Week and the support they give to musicians. But my question is, musicians have been talking to me about they'd like a reversal of the ban, and also they'd like to talk to Robert Doyle in regards to this matter and make you aware of the petition, so you're now aware of the petition and the support that the musicians have got. And the question is it appropriate that musicians contact yourself and other councillors and make you aware of the incredible support that musicians have to play amplified music on Swanson Street?
Thank you, Chris. Of course it's appropriate for them to contact councillors either severally or individually. I'm very happy to meet with a small group who would like to meet with me. We don't consider it a ban. It's a trial over 3 months in response to a number of complaints. It is just Swanson Street in a defined area. We would certainly also consult with the busking community before we made a decision about whether to continue that or abandon it. But it is, as you said, in response to a number of complaints. We're certainly not anti-busking or anti-music, but it was felt that the amplification was getting out of hand. If there's a way we can work with the music community to make sure that people's enjoyment of the amenity of the city continues, and yet musicians have the ability to ply their trade, we'd be delighted to try to find that line of best fit. But I would suggest that the first thing is, if they want to contact councillors, they're welcome. If they want to meet with me, I will certainly do that. And let's work together over this 3-month period to get the best result for music in the city.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. They were looking for avenues to communicate with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I now call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of Chair in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I'd like to first, actually, with the indulgence of councillors, move a procedural motion to rearrange the order for tonight, and that is just one change, that the agenda be changed so that item 6.3 is dealt with immediately after item 7.1. Is there a seconder for that, Lord Mayor? I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Declare that carried. Okay, so in the Finance and Governance portfolio, we have one report for management, which is agenda item 6.1, the Melbourne Metro Rail Project proposed acquisition and early occupation of the city square. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. Nope. So I call for a councillor to move a motion. Jeff Leach. We have a submitter. So Jeff, are you here? Jeff Leach? No. Okay. I think we'll move straight into Lord Mayor moving the motion. Is there a seconder? Councillor Wood, Lord Mayor.
Obviously, this is a project that we support. I would note that there is the matter of compensation, particularly for the business that would be affected by this decision, which of course is a matter for, well, now the organisation known as Metro Tunnel, not Melbourne Metro Rail Authority. They changed their name this week. And that's going to be very important for those businesses. the authority has decided on the mechanism of compulsory acquisition of the square, which we own, and the only question for us is, are we passive about that process, in which case it will follow through over many, many months, or do we wish to be proactive and negotiate with Metro Tunnel about potential benefits for the city as a result of early occupation? And that's all this does. It launches those negotiations with the authority to be reported back to us. And on that basis, I'm happy to support the motion.
Councillor Wood.
Happy to support this, Chair. I think, as the Lord Mayor has stated, this is a kick-off of a negotiating position. I think it's a good move for us. We do support the project. It's been our number one transport priority for some time. It's in our best interests as a council and as a community to facilitate the project, but obviously with that comes significant disruption. And by allowing access to City Square much earlier, we're obviously signalling that we wholeheartedly support the project, but also giving our officers the imprimatur to negotiate with MMRA to ensure we get the best outcomes for our city, for our residents, for our businesses. And when you look at the need for the project, tipping weekday boardings up to 1.5 million per week by 2031, City of Melbourne set to grow to 8 million in population. This is a once-in-a-generation project, but at the same time, it's up to the city and our partners, state government, to be working in partnership to certainly minimise the impact of this significant project on the city. But very happy to support this, look forward to the negotiations and to a really good outcome for the city.
Would anyone else like to speak on this item? Councillor Watts.
Constituents have contacted me about the way in which the various works of art, public art, are going to be treated within this major project, and I have reassurance from officers just today that we are very aware of what is required and are very mindful of the importance of liaising with the artists who are still with us and making sure that these works of art are stored properly and dealt with in the proper manner. So this is to reassure constituents who seem concerned about that particular aspect of the project.
Would anyone else like to speak on this item? Just say a couple of words. It's an unusual negotiating position to support early occupation before you have a financial agreement, but I think this indicates that the council is very strongly supportive of the project overall, and there will be a subsequent report on the outcome of negotiations probably before Christmas to be dealt with by the next council after the election. So you won't see occupation going ahead in February next year without an agreement, but this is just authorising the negotiation to proceed. But I think as far as signalling political support for this $12 billion project, both from the state and from the council, I think voting for early occupation of City Square to facilitate the development of the CBD South Station is a very emphatic political statement of support for what will be a very important city-shaping project for the next 100 years. So we'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Declare that carried unanimously, and now pass over to Councillor Oak for the transport portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Main. There's one report from management for consideration under the transport portfolio, agenda item 6.2, opportunities for Elizabeth Street South. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No.
Ask a question.
Yes, Councillor Lepp would like to ask a question.
Thank you, Chair. My question's, is that on?
Yeah.
My question's in relation to an issue I've raised in forum a while ago, actually, the potential for this project to canvas future potential for an underpass from Flinders Street Station to Rise, where this new plaza will be. I note that one of the organisations to be liaised with is PTV, and I imagine that it could be discussed there. But do you envisage that this issue, which I think is the only way of getting the underpass to be DDA compliant at last, could be canvassed as part of these discussions that we're setting up today?
Councillor
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Indeed, we can include that within the scope of the consultation that we're proposing.
Are there any other questions? No. Therefore, I call on a councillor to... I did know that. Sorry, I now call on Leslie Berger, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee. Sorry, Leslie. And thank you for your submission. And this is in addition to the written submission you've already provided? We can hand it along. Yeah. Okay. So you know you've got 3 minutes, and at the 2 minute mark, it will buzz.
Chair, Lord Mayor, councillors, my name is Leslie Berger. I'm the managing director of 5X. We own two properties along the eastern side of Flinders Street, which makes up, Elizabeth Street South, I should say, which makes up about 90% of the lineal frontage of the relevant streetscape. As has been widely reported in the press, there are some very serious social issues in this part of Melbourne, predominantly relating to safety and security, relating from criminal elements and also homelessness. What I'm hoping is that the council will consider our recommendations to include us. I believe we will be included in the consultation process, but I just want to make sure that is the case. And importantly, I want to make sure that as part of the consultation that in order to address these social issues, that the council consider activating the public domain and not just doing the works. And the way to activate it, I think, is two clear ways. One is to give the retailers an opportunity to have seating, and that should be part of the plan and the consultation. The second way of activating this area is by having a place management strategy in place. That's something that is well done overseas. It's something that's done throughout various United States cities. And you essentially, as a council, would need to ensure a member of staff is the place manager. You have an event schedule. You have a person in the council who is accountable and responsible for that part of Melbourne. And it's just a way of ensuring that during the construction phase, all the retailers and relevant parties have someone to speak to when there are problems during the construction phase. And it's also about ensuring that once the works are complete, that there is a member of council staff who is responsible for ensuring that there is that collaboration between the private sector and the various government authorities. Bottom line, 5X supports what the council is trying to do. Our objective is, first of all, we want to be part of this process and we welcome the council's initiative, so thank you very much. And it's also about ensuring we want to make sure the best possible outcome is achieved, and we will put in the time and resources to help you. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Do councillors have a question? Councillor Wood has got a question.
Sorry, Leslie, it's not of you, it's of our officers, actually. I thank you for your submission. Item 5 in your recommendation is exactly as you've just outlined there. I'm quite keen on that. Can I ask our director, Kate Vino, whether or not that is something that we'll consider for the construction phase? Recommendation 5 is that we commit to the place manager for Elizabeth Street South to be a single point of contact for the community to assist retailers and other affected parties during the construction phase and so on.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. One of the reasons for doing this stakeholder engagement is to actually have a complete understanding of the needs and interests of the stakeholders and actually get to know them and understand that and hopefully establish relationships for the longer term. The process by which we would follow that up, we would have to work through, but we understand absolutely that it's important that people have a direct contact with us as easily as possible.
Are there any other questions? I will move the recommendation on the screen. Is there a seconder? Yes, okay. Yeah, Councillor Foster. Okay, well, yes, it's exciting to have it's almost a blank canvas, but it's not. We've got a concept for half of this section of the Elizabeth Street South that we've been speaking about for a long time, and a lot of the media that have expressed interest in this latest announcement and iteration expressed their interest in all of the other previous announcements. Certainly glad to be moving on and moving forward with hopefully creating a much nicer and more amenable space, especially for the number one users down there, people getting on and off trams and people walking to the train station, as well as those enjoying the retail offering at that end of Elizabeth Street. It's certainly, people on feet are the number one mode, and creating a better amenity is certainly a great idea, and we've certainly heard that through submissions that have come through either formally for tonight or emails as a result of the press coverage. There certainly seems to be a lot of support out there for this project. There's certainly a lot of support for the project for Elizabeth Street as a whole, and that's still ongoing and still part of a council action, is looking at Elizabeth Street as a whole, and including the ideas that the RACV and others have put up about making it a much larger closure for the city. But as detailed in this report, and as we know, as the previous item alludes to, we have a major transport project that will be occurring in our city in the Metro Tunnel, and we certainly, and also extensive work to the tram network as a result of that, but also as a result of network changes that further changes will occur. We just need to work in concert with other transport modes and wait for the construction to be completed, as well as our other work around the whole of Elizabeth Street. But this is a good start, and it is just a start, and tonight we're just endorsing the program of stakeholder consultation, and the picture that is in our report is relatively blank for a purpose. It's to go out and discuss with people around loading zones and retail access and where the stormwater needs to be or not be, and where those seating options may or may not be, and where how do we make sure that it is accessible for the most people and enjoyable and different. So whilst there is a nice picture that shows half the street being closed off, it is also fairly scarce in details, and that the details are what we're wanting to fill in as a result of the consultation process. Incredibly important, and I agree with the submitter, that there are a lot of people that are interested in this project, and there will be a lot of questions, not only now, but if we then do proceed with the implementation of the construction, there will be a lot of questions around construction and access and timelines, and I think that's a really great suggestion, and I'm sure that's what we do anyway, but having a person that people can contact to make it a lot easier to follow up or to understand the process. Really important to me, and it is documented in the report, is that we are doing this in collaboration with the other transport providers that also have big works coming along the way, and this group of stakeholders are going to be asked a lot of questions over the next few months around disruption in our city, whether it's with Metro or Yarra Trams or PTV and others. We need to make sure they understand what this project's about, how it's involved or not involved, and make sure that that they're not getting 10 different pages about 10 different projects and 10 different timelines. Let's try our hardest to, once we've done the consultation, we know what we're going to actually implement, that then we communicate that in conjunction with all the other works that are going on. I think that's really, really important. I look forward to hearing what the community say, what the retailers, the businesses, the other modes of transport in that area say about the detail that is to be filled in, and then the timeline for implementation, because it'll be really exciting if we actually do complete this project and we don't need to make another announcement about potentially closing this project. It'll be great to actually see it happen. So I recommend this and look forward to the stakeholder consultation. Councillor Foster.
This one. Oh, I found one. Here we go. It's all right, we got there. Thanks, Councillor Oak. I certainly agree with all of that. One thing about this affinity to do something with that southern end of Elizabeth Street is it's really good timing. And Councillor Roke alluded to that. There's a major transport project going on in Melbourne that we've just heard about. Obviously, that impacts a lot of what we do pretty much anywhere in the city at the moment, but especially in close proximity to it around Elizabeth Street. I've been widely reported as being strongly in favour of doing something with that end of Elizabeth Street previously. It's not exactly one of Melbourne's most loved little corners at the moment, but I think it can be. I think it can be, and this is where consultation is going to be important so that we get this right. But the initial concepts that have been put out there tonight I think are really encouraging. I thank Leslie for his point about activation of the area. That is going to be crucial to making this work, and I know there's already some good ideas on the table. Activation does go a long way to clearing up some of the social problems that we are experiencing in that part of the city. And passively doing that is certainly the way to go. So the more that we can hear about that from businesses in the area and certainly other stakeholders is going to be crucial to getting this right. But I know we can, and again, I think a year or two from now, when we look back on what began as a consultation around one of the areas in the city that is in desperate need of improvement, will be really interesting to see how it shapes up, because it's going to be a whole lot better than where we've started today, that's for sure. What shape that takes, I'm going to be really eager to see.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. Are there any councillors who would like to speak against the motion? Any others like to speak to it? Councillor Wrong.
Thank you, Chair. It's interesting that we've been talking about this Elizabeth Street South for probably 6 to 7 years now. I remember from the first term back in 2009, we started talking about this. But then looking back to during that period of 2009 to probably towards the end of 2012, the record capital works program that the city undertook to do various libraries, both at South Bank and Kathleen Syme and Docklands and Carlton Baths and all that, I guess due to limited resources in one way or the other, those projects had to be done because they were promised to the community, and they were done and delivered to a really high quality level. So it's time to look at this while we have the QVM project, of course, it's the largest ever project that Council's undertook. I think this is timely since we undertook Swanston Street redevelopment a few years ago, which has now transformed what Swanston Street is compared to what it was. And there were a lot of pushback and various people who thought that this was going to be a disaster. But look at it now. I think the amount of utilization, the foot traffic, the whole day and night aspect of what we do to improve the amenity of such a great street like Swanston Street shows us that we have opportunity to do something really great here. This is only the first step. It's a consultation. We will take all the inputs. We will come up with probably somewhere between 50 to 200 ideas. You know, but in the end, you know, I look at it and I listen to what's been said by Leslie, and I say, we want a great place there. PTV is part of it. They're doing the work on the trams. We thought about closing the whole area from Flinders Street to Little Collins. And this current diagram shows there's still one lane of northbound traffic. You know, we close all the lanes on Swanston Street. We close most part of Swanston Street. We close the Burke Street Mall. It didn't work. So that's probably not out of the question. This is just an artist's sketch. You know, I see Elizabeth Street as one of the two main pedestrian thoroughfares heading towards Flinders Street. I walk that probably once or twice a week when I have to head on down the South Bank. I also see it as a place of clutter, incredible clutter, where there's a mishmash of all kinds of furniture on the street, plus infrastructure the council's put in and benches and everything else. And it is actually quite difficult during the peak hour for a 5-meter-wide footpath to become 2 meters effectively. That's not good design. I think we can do a lot better going into the future. So I think with some of the ideas put in, I really look forward to seeing the transformation of Elizabeth Street South. Later on, when you see the future Melbourne themes, and one of the themes was a great walking city. There is no theme in there that says great driving city. And so we should consider that even the group of the jurors have said, we want this city to be a better walking city. So let's be brave and just close that section. You know, and there are parts of Sydney where you've got to drive for 3 or 4 blocks before you can turn to get to the place on the next street. So not really a big issue, I see. So I look forward to it.
I love it, Councillor Ong. I love it. Don't encourage me, Councillor Ong. Are there any other councillors that would like to speak, or any speakers to the motion? Councillor Watts.
Just a comment, really. Alarm bells started in my mind when I read a program of targeted stakeholders. So we've been in strife from time to time in the city in relation to having a comprehensive stakeholder engagement. So I raised it with officers today, and their understanding of targeted is not the same as mine. They understand that we really have to get everybody in there saying things. So it might read targeted, but it's targeted in the best possible way, inclusive, comprehensive. So I'm reassured by their comments to me.
Councillor Mayne.
I just think, speaking of Sydney, I do remember in the old days driving back from Sydney before the Western Ring Road was constructed, and this is where you'd finish, at the end of Elizabeth Street, and it wasn't a particularly appealing way to finish your big long drive from Sydney to Melbourne. So that artist's sketch is very appealing to consider how it will look, and I think early next year will be a very exciting time in Melbourne. You're going to have early occupation of the city square, and at the same time you're going to have some track works at the bottom end of Elizabeth Street, which have presented an opportunistic chance for us to get in with the beautification of the bottom of Elizabeth Street coinciding with the state government's track work. So it's a good nimble work by our officers to see this sequencing opportunity with the state and to progress much talked about and long overdue changes, which are complicated given the density of the uses and given the stakeholders and particularly the tram infrastructure there. So very exciting. The first 3 months of next year, it's going to be big things happening in the city, and this project will be one of them. Is frankly very exciting.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Are there any other speakers for the motion? Lord Mayor.
I would just say that I take up Councillor Watts's point, and in our papers at Attachment 3, there's the proposed stakeholder consultation plan. It does look pretty comprehensive to me, but I'm sure if there are any others that councillors would suggest or that we've left out, that our officers would be pleased to take them in. I will just take... I know Councillor Ong gladdened your heart, Councillor Oak, but I'm about to de-gladden your heart. I don't think at this stage, given the data on traffic that we have, that we could support the closure of the western side of Elizabeth Street. That is, people turning from Flinders Street left into Elizabeth. And the reason for that is the data that was proposed to us showed that those people, and there are significant traffic volumes doing that, are doing so to turn left again at Flinders Lane and access the major city car parks. So it is a very important traffic conduit for cars coming into the city. Conversely, the data shows that traffic heading towards Flinders Street Station on the eastern side of Elizabeth Street, while traffic in the city over the last 8 to 10 years has dropped about 5% overall, in that particular stretch it has dropped something like 65%. And therefore there are demonstrable reasons why a closure of the eastern side will not affect traffic flows, but it is not yet demonstrated that closing the western side would have the same effect. And we may get the entirely unenviable thing that you do sometimes get in Sydney of people circling and circling and circling at 3 and 4 block intervals. And I'm not sure that would be a good result for the city. Nevertheless, I entirely support what we need to do. We have been exhorted in public to go further, and it may well be in future times we do. We do have an Elizabeth Street Master Plan. But I just remind people that as these infrastructure projects kind of collide, you have to make them work together. And Metro Tunnel, is going to have an effect on this. We'd all like to see the tram taken round the corner at Elizabeth Street to join the rest of the tram network, and we need to make sure that the works being done by Yarra Trams, which has precipitated this proposal, is aligned so that around the corner movement can happen in the future, and we need to talk to Yarra Trams about the design of their tracks, as the report suggests. But the reason that we can't go further at the moment is until we see the plan for Melbourne Metro, then we're going to need to think about the placement of those major tram stops, both in Flinders Street so that people can get off at Flinders Street Station, because that may well be disrupted when Melbourne Metro acquires the property around Young and Jackson's, and that may necessitate the movement of the major superstop that's further back, going towards the north on Elizabeth Street, and whether that needs to be relocated. So until we see what happens with those major pieces on the chessboard, this is a very welcome but a very modest beginning to reimagining Elizabeth Street. But I think, you know, these are all small details. I have yet to hear of anybody who hasn't said that we need to do it, and in fact most people say do it thoroughly and get on with it.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other speakers to the motion? No. I will therefore put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise their hands. It's carried unanimously. Thank you. And I now call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of chair of the meeting. Is that right? Sorry. Yes? Didn't we change it around? Yes, Councillor Ong as chair of planning portfolio.
Right. Thank you, Councillor Oak. It looks like the next item on the agenda, due to an earlier amendment, is agenda item 6.4, which is the completion of the refreshed Future Melbourne Plan to 2026. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Yep, we have. Yes. So, actually, I now call on Professor Glenn Davis to, on behalf of all the ambassadors, to make a brief presentation. Yep. Professor Davis.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Thank you very much for the chance to speak very briefly to the Lord Mayor. Thank you for the invitation to join the Future Ambassadors Group, to my fellow ambassadors, Maria, Marita, Kate, Rob and Tracy. Thank you very much, and I'm delighted that Rob is here this afternoon. To the team who helped us organise this, in particular to David Mays here on his last day with the council, to Kate Vinneau and Ben Rimmer, and then to the 52 citizens who worked on the citizens' jury, many of whom are here, and it's a delight to see them here this afternoon. Thank you very much. It's been a really interesting and important, I think, process. The product intended from this nine-month process is Future Melbourne 2026. We watched with fascination the way the Council has used over the last 10 years the Future Melbourne 2008 strategy, so we've very much worked in that mould and sought to develop it. Like that plan, it emphasised that this is a city for people, one that's prosperous, creative, connected and knowledge-driven, yet an awful lot has changed since 2008. You'll see, for example, though sustainability remains in the plan, it has been moved up to a much more central position that reflects that. And there are three new goals added to the program: a deliberative city, an endorsement of the city's aspiration to be our most open and transparent council, a city of conversation, as the Lord Mayor put it. Secondly, a city managing change, given the enormous growth in this city, but also the technological opportunities that we face. And finally, and importantly, a city with an Aboriginal focus, a new goal, one that challenged the jury and the ambassadors, not so much on the if, but on the how. How do we make this a city that reflects its Indigenous heritage for the present and the future? So I commend the council for agreeing to work with the community in this very structured and sustained way. More than 4,000 people were touched through this process in some way, nearly 1,000 ideas developed and presented. There are a number of members of the jury who will speak directly to their experience of doing this. But we think that the program will give you, as the council, a very solid basis to continue the great work of Future Melbourne 2008. From 2016, and a 10-year vision to take this forward. We hope it proves valuable to you and to future councils over the next 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Davies, for speaking on behalf of the ambassadors as the chair and also for the members of the jury, the citizens' jury. It is a great pleasure now for me to call, first of all, Lisa Adams, a member of the citizens' jury who will address the committee for no more than 3 minutes.
Actually, Councillor Ong, we were hoping we could show the video first and then the three of us would speak after that as a group, so we'll take up our 9 minutes collectively with the video and that.
That's fine.
I joined because I figured it would be a way for me to have a say in a forum that is supportive.
I can see plenty of opportunity to get bogged down in particular issues, but I think the debate will be useful.
I think it's really rare that you get a city that gives you the opportunity to contribute ideas around how you want the future of that city that you live in and participate in to actually be.
There's so much warmth in the city and it's a beautiful people city.
To be honest, I think the city is going to experience change in the next 10 years, quite unlike any period of change that we've seen in the last little while.
What we ask you to do is think about the big questions that we're facing in the next generations. The decisions that we put in place are going to determine what sort of city we become, and that's why we ask you to help us. What sort of city do we wish to become?
Today is a very exciting day for us because it's the first day of the Future Melbourne 2026 Citizens Jury.
Over the next few weeks, we're going to be meeting with the 59 members of the Citizens Jury and the ambassadors and working our way through the key issues in front of Melbourne.
People who visit here, the people who work here, the people who live here, they can look at this plan and go, yeah, I can buy into that, and that's a future that I want to get involved in.
I think that this is a very critical time where Melbourne can either continue to progress positively or not, really.
It's an understandable process. It's slightly messy, but democracy is slightly messy.
You get all these people with all these different diverse views in, you're going to get a lot of tension, but at the same time you get, I guess, what democracy is all about, which is getting to like diverse views and how to kind of negotiate around them.
It continues a long legacy we have in Melbourne of being ambitious about our future, so I'm thrilled that the city has engaged with it, but even more thrilled by the level of passion that the citizens' jury has brought to the table.
Yeah, I think the whole process of voting is to whether you can live with it, you know, and I think I'm proud of it. And I think, you know, talking to the other jurors, they're proud of it too.
Are you comfortable with it? Can you live with it being in your court? That's what this is about.
The way that people react to certain issues surprised me consistently, mostly in a good way.
You would always come in with, you know, with certain agendas, things that you can change. And of course you stick with those, but everyone else has different things they want to change.
To have to reach supermajority consensus between us is really a feat, so getting 80% of people to agree is a big deal.
And then still being mindful of all the research that has been done that includes the wider community, so it's not just us. I thought it was a really good chance to just learn about the people that, you know, we walk past every day.
I don't think that we as a group would ever have met and come together and discuss ideas and produced a report that made as many people as it did happy about the outcome.
I'm always excited about the future of Melbourne. We have a wonderful council, we have an inclusive council, and we have a council that engages with the community. So that alone makes the future very exciting.
Thanks for all your hard work. It's going to be a rare treat to go through your work, and it really has been fantastic to see your commitment to it. Thanks. Councillor Ong, can I call up Nico and Heath, who are going to present alongside me? For comfort. Great. All right.
Hello everyone, my name is Lisa Adams and I live in Carlton. I was randomly selected to be on the jury because I'm a business owner. And I decided to register for the jury for two reasons. One, I was curious. I'd read about the citizens' jury process used for the financial plan last year in The Age, and that really interested me. And, of course, the second reason why I registered was because I care about Melbourne. And while I haven't previously been involved in council initiatives, I'm deeply invested in the future of this city. And as I discovered, so is everyone else who was involved in Future Melbourne 2026. And so to my experience of the jury, well, it was hard work, as my fellow jurors would testify. Lots to read and process, lots of deep listening to others, lots of learning, lots of deliberation on what to include and how to include it. I was unsure how creating a report that we could all stand by could even be possible. The idea of literally writing a report with 50 or more other people was mind-boggling. However, the leadership of Robert Doyle and the ambassadors was pivotal. Their resolute commitment and belief gave confidence, and that was really important. They strongly encouraged us to be bold and put forward big ideas, and they reminded us of that when we were kind of getting a bit wayward, so it was great to be brought back to the task. My impression was that as a jury, we were tentative about this at first, and it took a couple of days to get into the swing of it. And by the final Saturday morning, we were a well-oiled deliberative machine. The speed at which we were able to put forward our ideas and suggestions, figure out whether they'd get a Guernsey or not, improve on each other's ideas and move on to the next task was awe-inspiring. This couldn't have been possible without our extraordinary facilitators, and I know that two of them are here. They kept us on task, held us to account, made us all feel safe in the group. We were not afraid to speak up and be heard, and they ensured that everyone had the opportunity to speak and be heard. Is that 1 minute to go? The professionalism, commitment and care of the council staff was exceptional. You've got a wonderful team. My regard for my fellow jurors could not be higher. Melbourne is full of good intent and tons of talent. Our diversity was our strength, as was our collective passion for this city and our commitment to get the job done. We all wanted a jury report that we could be proud of and stand by. I've read the final report and the ambassador's input, and you have done us proud. Thank you so much. I'm personally deeply grateful to have had this opportunity to contribute alongside such extraordinary people. I wondered at the outset whether this could be possible, and I have learned that this citizen jury process works and it is possible. So thank you and congratulations to all.
Hello, I'm Nico and I've been in Melbourne for 4 years, completing my mechanical engineering degree at the University of Melbourne. I attended Ormond College for 2 years and have been living in North Melbourne since then. I joined the jury because I'm really interested in public policy and in citizen democracy. My experience of the jury was incredible because when you go to university, you're surrounded by very similar thoughts on a daily basis, especially when you attend a college. And being able to meet such a wide range of people with completely different social, moral, and political views really broadened my view of the difficulties that you as councillors must have to try and represent such a broad group of people. And my two fellow jurors are going to talk about the kind of jury as a whole. And what I wanted to talk about was, as national governments more and more at loggerheads, it becomes a responsibility of local government to ask the big questions about our life. And using a citizens process jury like this really allows you guys to ask this question. But I'm sure you're coming away from this and saying, oh, it was actually really expensive to run this. And what I wanted to bring up was, it's not really necessary to serve us salmon lunches or unlimited barista coffee, which are nice, I did appreciate it, but a lot of the people who are on this jury with us were just incredibly passionate about the city of Melbourne. And they absolutely would have come here on a Wednesday evening and sat in this room and discussed among themselves. Many didn't want to talk to politicians, but they were happy to come and bring real ideas and real solutions to the problems and challenges that our society faces with each other and discuss them and provide tangible results when they were given the opportunity to do so. I really heavily encourage, I know some of you are, you know, coming to the end of your term, but those of you who are getting re-elected, I really encourage you to continue doing things like this, even if there's smaller, more tangible problems than how is this city going to look in 10 years, which is incredibly complicated. Have them about smaller issues, about, you know, what the city's going to do when it stops having 20 or 30% of its revenue from parking when we're all driving around in autonomous cars. It's a tangible issue. Put people in a room and they will give you a good solution. Thank you.
Hello, So I realise I have an extra minute to kind of say. So I'd like to start off with a big thank you to every politician, councillor and everyone in this room. The simple fact that we're all here for the same objective of making the city the best place anyone could be in. My heart goes out to all of you, and it's very tough work, so I admire that. I'd like to not necessarily talk so much about the process, but how I felt about the process. So I've written a little two-minute thing for this. Educated, homeless, drug-addicted, unemployed Aboriginal white man. These are words that define who I once was. I didn't come here today to sound like just another hippie. I am here because we all believe in the communal objective of making this city a better place for not just your children, but your friends and family and everyone else, not just, if not for anyone else, but ourselves. A community is defined by the actions of love and fear. No two emotions could have been more present during my experience of the Developing the Future Melbourne 2016 to 2026 plan. For 2 whole months, I battled in within myself and with the jury to capture what it truly means, not to just me, myself, but my friends and my family and everybody else that I've met while on the street or at parties or wherever I could go to find this information. What we truly felt would make the number one voted most livable city in the world. A city that could be supported and safe and happy for everybody, not only inside this room, but outside of it. I began this speech with describing who I once was because I genuinely believe it is the community and environment that I live in that shaped who I am today. Thank you.
Thank you to Lisa and Nico and Heath. Well spoken, and thank you for coming tonight to give us your views of this whole process. I would like you to invite you back to sit down, and then the council and councillors will put our own comments forward. Thank you. I'm happy to move the recommendation that's up on the screen. I call on the councillor to second it. Lord Mayor, thank you. I commend, first of all, Lord Mayor for pushing and leading this, and also recognize the ambassadors for their time and effort, and of course, the citizens' jury. I unfortunately could not attend all the sessions, but I attended the last two and part of the last two, and I found the passion that was in there in the discussions. There was no sort of a mindset that says, time's up, let's go. No such thing. They just argued until the points get through. And I'd like to say that the facilitators did a fantastic job, and as well as the staff there who were really trying to make sure things get moving. And because I was late that day, I didn't get any of the barista coffee. I think the citizens' jury drank all 500 cups of it or something. But it's good to see the presentation. And I also like to commend Heath for what the debate and the discussions that went on regarding the inclusion of the indigenous part of our heritage. That as the chair, Professor Davis, said, no, it was a question of how do we include it. It was not whether we do, but the implementation, I'm glad to see it in the report as well. Overall, David Mays, who has led this process, it's not an easy process and activity to take on, and I just like to congratulate him, his effort, his perseverance in bringing it to this level of conclusion for us, and for future councils, because it's very clearly stated these are the important things for council. It's also very interesting to read the point that there's a comment in there that says, this council has the guts to do this. Because I can tell you, and I actually commend here Councillor Main too in the past for pushing forward in that financial 10-year plan, the process, and that to try to get the rest of Victorian and national local governments to embrace this process. And I'm looking forward to that day happening. I'm not going to add too much more, and I just want to congratulate everyone who has been involved in this. And I'll pass it over to the Lord Mayor for comments.
Thank you, Councillor. First, can I also thank the Ambassadors, Glyn Davis, Kate Orty, Marita Cheng, Tracy Fellows, Maria Katsonis and Rob McGoran. They give truth to the old adage that if you want to get something done, you ask very busy people. And we're very grateful that such senior members of our community would give their time in this way. Naturally, I want to thank the jury members, the backbone of this whole process, a remarkable demographic slice of our city whose passion and whose commitment have resulted in the report that we've got before us, which is for us a very powerful lever of public policy advice, of public policy feedback from those who are most invested in it about the very future of our city. Because I meant what I said in that short newsreel of the process, that I wanted people to be bold. I wanted them to think about what sort of city do you want for your loved ones and for your families in future generations. Because as I pointed out, I think at the time, the decisions we make now will have resonance for 10, 20, 30 years. And so we better get them right now, because to undo them is much more difficult than to put the work in at the front end and try to get them right. And that's certainly what you've done for us. We gave you a more difficult task than our last citizens' jury, which was quite a focused and constrained process to look at a 10-year financial plan and build it basically from the ground up. We asked you to look at something that was much broader, but at the same time that already had a sound base to work from. And in some cases, as you found, that's much more difficult than having a blank sheet of paper to work with. And that's what you have done. The thing that pleases me about this is it seems to me that this strikes a balance. You've said to us that exhaustive process that we went through in 2007 and 2008, that underlying structure is sound, and the sound parts should be retained, and you've reflected that in your report, but with a 2026 focus in mind. But you've also said to us that some changes are needed, and Glyn mentioned those, the three new goals, saying what sort of city is a city of deliberation? A city that is prepared for change, a city that embraces its Aboriginal heritage. And they are things that we're going to have to consider deeply, but you've already put us on that path, and we thank you for that. Three final thank yous. First, to Professor Glyn Davis. Glyn, can I thank you very much for taking this on. When a person of the eminence of the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Melbourne is prepared to give his time in order to lead a process like this over a lengthy period of time, then I think that not only is the process one that is sound, but one that gives it a great deal of substance. And thank you for lending us your considerable abilities, not just as the Vice-Chancellor, but interestingly enough in your academic career as someone who has specialised in this sort of thinking. Secondly, can I thank him in absentia, our CEO, Ben Rimmer. It was Bren who brought this idea to me that something that we needed to address in the same way that the council before many of us were elected in 2007 put this up to say to the new council, us in 2008, here is the structure we think you need to take forward. And in the same way, we will be able to do that for the council that takes over from us in November of this year. Some of us hope we might be back, in fact, to help you to implement it, but that's a matter for the electors. So we feel that we have done that, and that was Ben's. And finally, can I say to David Mays, this was a task we gave David, knowing that it is the underlying bones of everything that we do in the council, and gave you a process to go with it that is not easy to manage and must be done in an appropriate way. And David, the whole team have done an outstanding job for us, but you in particular, I wanted to thank for your leadership and for your agreement to take this on in the first instance. A deep and personal thank you.
Would any councillors like to also speak to the motion? I won't ask anyone who wants to speak against it. So.
I thought you were going to say against, Chair. I wouldn't speak against it at all. I think the process is a good one. I think the first Future Melbourne process was excellent. I got to be part of that on the other side of it, and going through that process, and some of our submitters speaking tonight, the jurors talking about how proud they were to be part of it, I can understand that wholeheartedly. When I got the phone call, I thought, you know, why would anyone want to listen to me? I was obviously a lot younger then. I had more hair. But why would anyone want to listen to me and my view on the city? And I think one of the wonderful things about the process is it doesn't matter whether you're the Vice-Chancellor or whether you're a business owner or whether you're a young person. It doesn't matter where you come from in the city, but all of your voices were equal through the process, and I think that's the wonderful thing about it. I'm not sure whether it was Nico or Health who said about the salmon being an expensive sort of addition, but I would have a slightly different view on that, in that the amount of work that you put in, if we had to add up all the hours and invoice those hours at a market rate for all the work that you've put into this, then that's a very small price to pay. So I'm okay with the salmon being served and the barista coffee. I thank you for all your work, and the strength of all of us being much greater than any one of us is very clear in this. Very happy to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Further speakers to the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. A lot's already been said, so I'll try and keep my comments to new things, but can I too just also acknowledge the huge amount of work that's gone into this and thank all of the jury members and our ambassadors for helping us on this remarkable process and producing such a wonderful document. When I got elected to council in 2012 and we basically inherited the community's version of Future Melbourne Plus Council's four-year iteration of how they'd been interpreting the Future Melbourne plans then. I started as a bit of a cynic, and I am a bit of a cynic. All of these really, really high-level goals, what could they possibly actually mean? I mean, until you actually delve down into the detail, and that's where I'm stuck 99% of the time, I struggle to see how those really high-level statements of intent can actually mean anything. I've learnt over the last 3.5 years, or nearly 4 years, however long it's been this term, seems like longer, that actually these are fundamentally restructuring the way the City of Melbourne, not just the council, but the entire administration thinks about key issues before us. That a creative city was a goal introduced within the last 10 years and we didn't have it previously has been fundamentally important to the way that I, as the Chair of Arts, have been able to get certain projects off the ground, have been able to work with the administration across the entire organisation to prioritise creative issues so that arts is no longer seen as a niche issue in a silo of its own, but actually a creative city is something that we're all aspiring to. The opportunities that the addition of three new goals is going to provide us, or whatever the new council, however the new council is made up, I should say, is going to interpret the community's Future Melbourne update and work with it, I think is going to have many, many more updates. I'm tremendously excited, of course, about the Aboriginal focus goal. I'm very, very excited about the deliberative city goal. Both of these things are things as a Green that, of course, I'm very excited about. I won't embarrass you all by arguing that you've all landed at a de facto Greens policy platform, but well done, you kind of have. Lord Mayor, block your ears. Look, I think the opportunities are remarkable. So don't underestimate just how powerful these seemingly very high-level and not very detailed statements are. They actually are fundamental to the way this organisation operates. The Future Melbourne Plan has been so important to our work over the last 8 years, and particularly I can only comment on the last 4 years as a councillor, but I'm really looking forward to where we can go from here as well. The last thing I want to say is Tony Penner, those words are going to come back to haunt you. We're going to expect you to be very, very positive at all of your future submissions to this council in this place. But thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Further speakers at all? We'll take Councillor Watts and then Councillor Main next.
Very briefly, our thanks are genuine. You've put in a lot of work for us. You've put in a lot of work for our city collectively. It's reminded us all, hasn't it, that the wisdom is out there. And I'm mindful that we have this reputation as a world's most livable city. But my definition of a livable city is one that should be defined by the people. And what you've done is effectively set out what, in your view, is necessary. for our city to be livable on our terms, your terms. That's your city. So I thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Main?
Look, who are these random jurors and unelected ambassadors telling us politicians what to do? I've got 27 amendments that I'd like to move to their plan. No, I'd just like to also thank particularly our CEO, Ben Rimmer. I remember badgering him for a second jury after the first one, and I put up some very challenging topics where he didn't want to go. And in the end, he absolutely drove this one. I was amazed at the quality of the ambassadors that he was able to persuade to be associated and provide excellent advice. This unique hybrid model of topic experts, ambassadors with the random jury is unique. I haven't seen this run with the quite large number of citizen juries across Australia now that have been run and are still running. Thank you also to David Mays for driving this and Kate Vino as well and every other officer who was involved. Excellent facilitators I know who are here. Facilitators make citizen juries. You have to get good facilitators, and the second time in a row we've had great facilitators. To think that the City of Melbourne has now had close to 100 jurors randomly chosen to participate in two very large topics of a 10-year financial plan and this 10-year community plan is just exciting. I know that trust in elected officials is at record lows. People are disengaged, and this is a great way to get quality people voluntarily stepping in to engage, deep dive, learn about the complexities, and then provide neutral, non-vested interest advice back to the elected reps. Particularly, final point, excited about the deliberative city model, and I'll just throw up a thought bubble, councillors, that a standing citizen jury to rotating, but a standing citizen jury to give us ongoing advice on the very many difficult topics that we grapple with would be a lot of salmon, but it would be that's yours, Aaron Wood. It would be a very bold way for the next council to embrace that recommendation, and with technology, I think the cost of it potentially could be coming down. So I just throw that one in there. But congratulations to everyone involved in this wonderful process.
Thank you, Councillor Main. You're trying to pass off your responsibilities to the public, are you? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. I too would like to put my thanks on record for the ambassadors, for the jurors, and obviously for the staff involved, in particular David and Kate and Yvonne, and I'm sure there are many others that I should name. A great process, exciting, as all of us have mentioned. I think that the way that the City of Melbourne has embraced participatory democracy and citizen juries has really come leaps and bounds since the first one. We hold up the original Future Melbourne process as a pretty amazing process for understanding the desires of the community for the future of Melbourne. But and whilst that document has been great and has certainly led to us focusing on the key ambitions of our community, I think that this particular process, that it was much more detailed and much more focused, and I think that the detail, whilst it may not be apparent necessarily in the document in front of us, the detail that has been discussed and the officers have been involved in that process, hopefully that the legacy of the work that you've put in is not just in the document but in the memory of all of the staff involved and those of you within the community, in keeping the future council to account as well. It's an important legacy, not only internally but externally. So I thank you. The challenge is making sure that the next council is kept to account. I mean, I know that we're only noting your plan. I mean, really, we should be endorsing it, but, perhaps it's really for the next council to decide how they use this information and the work moving forward. And they've certainly set a big challenge in the document and in your asks, and I look forward to seeing how it does unfold and how the next council uses this really, really important information. So thank you very much for being involved.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Councillor Ong. I too would like to thank all of the jurors. Huge amount of time
as well, the ambassadors, for giving up so much time, but also bringing to it a high level of energy and creativity and integrity. And I think this alone proves that the deliberative process is certainly necessary, as well as voting, so for the future of Melbourne. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Pinamonima. Any further speakers? If not, I'll make a couple of closing comments. I thank all the inputs from my fellow councillors and Lord Mayor. And I think the word livable was used a few times, the most livable city. As the chair of planning, and I have been asked many times in various conferences and international forums to explain how the city of Melbourne is the world's most livable. And I said the key is in the word livable. It relates to people. Livable is for people. It's not about buildings. It's not about infrastructure and roads and all that. In the end, it's what people want. And here, this process is what the people of Melbourne, a selected group of randomly selected people, who lives and works and studies and enjoys the cities and uses the cities and coming together over four sessions and came up with these outcomes. And I think that's great. And I challenge any future council to say, we just note this and we'll just do what we want. I think the past two councils have accepted the previous one and took it on board and tried to deliver all those outcomes that were part of the original one. And I'm quite sure that the future councils will do the same, because there's nothing wrong in what's in here. I think that's important. On that note, I will put this to the vote. All those in favour, I declare the carried unanimously. Which now comes to... Oh, I pass it back to the Lord Mayor to take over as chair.
I might pause in case people wish to... to leave before this agenda item. There's more salmon awaiting you. David. Tony.
Read your words.
How are you?
Yeah. Very well presented.
Thank you. Thanks, Glenn. I shall see you very shortly. Well said. Thank you. There is one item of general business to be considered in open session, and that is Agenda Item 7.1, Post-Trouble Report by Councillor Jackie Watts to Yangon, Myanmar in July. Could I call on Christopher Lamb to address us for 3 minutes? Christopher? No. Okay, not to worry. In that case, could I call on a councillor to move a motion with respect to this matter? Councillor Oak, seconded Deputy Lord Mayor. Thank you. Councillor Oak?
I was waiting for you to move it, yes. Councillor Watts. Is it possible to transfer?
Oh yeah, I can move. I can change the mover. Councillor Watts. Sorry, I misspoke. I meant Councillor Watts.
Yes.
Please, Councillor Watts, up to you.
I find it how appropriate that this motion should follow what we've just listened to. Melbourne is a model for Yangon, the future that may well happen, but not yet in Yangon. I'm delighted to be able to bring this report to you. I hope that it will be widely read. It will be circulated. Melbourne and Yangon share much and of the past, and they will be sharing much in the future. I'd be very pleased if this report inspires more interest in Yangon and more commitment to working with Yangon, given that we are such a privileged and livable city.
Thank you, Councillor. Deputy Lord Mayor, do you wish to speak to it?
Thank you. Yes, I would like to sort of thank Jackie, Councillor Watts, because she has continually flied the flag for this country, which has been in devastating ways over the years. But she's come back with a very interesting report and very much a futuristic report that hopefully will go forward.
Thank you. Is there a further contributor to debate? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
I too would like to thank Councillor Watts. I think she's been banging on this for a long time, and I'm so proud of where you've taken it to, Jackie. I too love Myanmar, and just to see all of this stuff being reported on is sensational. So, well done.
Further speaker to debate? Councillor Foster.
I'm going to borrow yours, mover. Yeah, I just wanted to thank Jackie for her contribution to extending Melbourne's reach and to extending Melbourne's expertise too, because a lot of people don't realise that Councillor Watts has been actively involved in restoring an old clock tower over in Myanmar. I think she's actually rebuilding it herself from what I understand, brick by brick. But Melbourne's expertise has been enormously important to achieving that. Councillor Watts has told me on more than one occasion that she waited some 50 years to get to Myanmar simply because of the politics over that time preventing her from being able to do that, and in the last 3 years she's made multiple trips there. So I think it's also important to recognise too those councillors that do take the initiative to travel and to promote Melbourne in other parts of the world, especially when it's done at their own expense or is otherwise funded outside council resources, as this one was from Councillor Watts. So important to recognise that, and I too join with other councillors and extend my thanks to her for the work she's doing in this area.
Thank you. Further speaker to debate? Okay, so I'll just add one word, and again to thank Councillor Watts for her work. One move that we've tried to make is to edge Yangon and Myanmar to be a part of the Business Partner Cities Network. We're about to send Councillor Louis to the Business Partner Cities Network, and we'll ask him to continue to press that case to see if the Myanmar delegation can be at least admitted on an observer basis and then perhaps move towards membership of the Business Partner Cities through Yangon. Mover wish to conclude debate? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. I now pass back to Councillor Ong as Chair of Planning to consider item 6.3.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Second agenda item for the under the planning portfolio is the Planning Scheme Amendment C190, Arden-Macaulay.
Chair, could I just point out that I have to declare a conflict of interest here. One of the submitters to the C190 panel, Allied Mills, was a donor to my 2012 election campaign along with my fellow Team Doyle members.
Not the whole thing. So it's not... State that the Lord Mayor, the Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Louis, Councillor Wood and Councillor Pindamorda have left the room due to the joint conflict of interest there. So now I continue this. Would councillors like a presentation on C190? Nope. Then I will go to the speakers. I just like to remember everyone has 3 minutes. After 2 minutes, the buzzer will sound and you have 1 minute to wind up. And there are 12 speakers. So I first call on Yvonne Erickson to address the committee for 3 minutes. Yvonne? Nope. Okay, no worries. Radio. You may begin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I am Paul McAlpine, owner and resident of 49 Albemarle Street in Kensington. I'm here to represent the residents of 43 to 51 Albemarle Street, Kensington. The five couples do not wish to take their individual 3 minutes, and I do not intend to waste your time with a 15-minute dissertation. I would, however, like to give you an indication of how long it will take if I could just ask a few questions, if that's okay. Is that possible?
Just go, okay. You've got your 3 minutes, and then we'll see how it goes, okay?
Does the committee have the ability to make a slight adjustment to one page in the 190 document?
If it's valid.
Okay, thank you. I have a 5-minute presentation, if that's okay.
Okay. You have 3 minutes because, as I said, there are 12 speakers, and if we add two to each one, we'll end up with an hour.
Okay. Firstly, let me thank you for allowing me to speak on this matter. We are here, five resident couples, tonight representing the existing residential character of Albemarle Street between Little Hardiman Street and Macaulay Road. We wish to have the section of Albemarle Street between Little Hardiman and Macaulay Road be formally recognised as a residential interface street. So if I could draw your attention to the handout. The first two pages are maps from the C190. I'll just speak to one. You can see a little circle on the document.
Yep.
And you can see a purple line travelling along Hardiman Street into Albemarle Street, and it stops at the circle. All we're asking is for that purple line to be continued to Macaulay Road. That will provide the same protection given to our neighbours by the purple line, which currently travels along Hardiman Street. Okay. A decision to allow for the adjustments we are requesting would reflect a number of sections in the C190 plan, which we largely agree with. If I draw your attention to the second document, this shows what the risk is. What is at risk here? This is an ad for the property in orange, and they're correctly highlighting all the advantages of living in this area. But it is leveraging, as any business would, on the development opportunities, and includes reference to a neighbour who had, at that time, an 8-level planning application before the council for 54 apartments. With the purple line in the existing C190, that assisted us and over 60 residents in the immediate area to object to that plan, which is currently being revised. The picture also shows our immediate neighbours across the road here, which has recently been listed for sale. Without this amendment, developers of that neighbour would be free to apply for permission for at least 6 storeys. I'm going to jump to the end. I'm conscious of the time. The last document here is a scale representation of what the 8-storey application would look like, looking east from Hardiman Street. And currently you can see the roof of the factory that's opposite our residences, which is currently up for sale, immediately next to the 8 storeys that was applied for. It's not hard to imagine how out of place a building of 6 storeys or so would look. It's for these reasons that we strongly request that all of Albemarle Street between Hardiman Street and Macaulay Road be designated a residential interface street. And this will assist us in ensuring as best as possible the retention of the existing residential character.
Got a question. You're also representing who else here?
Okay. Residents of 41.
1, 2, 3. So which is what? Paul?
Peter.
Peter.
And 43, which is Paul.
Paul, yes.
45, which is Bruce.
Bruce.
And 51, which is Yvonne.
And Yvonne. So you've got 5 speakers. You need to have a couple more minutes?
Well, that... Okay, that's what I was after.
Go on. Continue.
Thank you.
I'll give you another 3.
Let's start the clock again.
Okay, well, it might be opportune to mention the sections of the C190 plan, which would be assisted by this adjustment. That plan already references, there's 4 sections I want to talk to. 1, to ensure the height and setbacks of new development at the interface with existing established residential neighbourhoods is compatible with the scale, amenity and context of these areas. 2, to ensure the scale, height and setback of new development on existing residential streets is compatible with the scale and context of these streets. 3, to ensure
that built form elements above the street wall are visually recessive and do not contribute to visual bulk. 4, to ensure new development respects the character, form, massing and scale of adjoining heritage buildings. So now that I've got the chance, I'll refer you to the second last document, which is a Google map.
Mm.
And on that map, you can see the 5 residences in question that we are here to represent. And you can see that they are in scale with the neighbourhood, the residential neighbourhood here. And you can also see the development that's applied for the 8 storeys, and you can see the orange development previously referred to, which is here, and you can see the currently for sale area here. That shows the neighbourhood character we're trying to protect. Our warehouse conversion and the residences that I've referred to border the CC190, and this demonstrates how our building does not dominate the landscape and was built to meet the elements of the C190 before the C190 existed. I would submit that such a small change we're not reaching for the stars. It still allows for growth, and I submit that it's one worth taking. Otherwise, we run the risk of buildings like that. And although the council is supportive, we know that council isn't the end game. And this slight change will only be able to enforce the current residents to maintain that residential character. Thank you. Is there any questions?
Question for the speaker. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you. Did you make this submission during the exhibition stage or in the extra step we set up post-exhibition prior to panel?
No, I did not, and I can respond to that. My wife and I have lived in that residence for over 10 years now, and we were aware of the C190. We certainly weren't aware of the consequences of it, and that's our mistake. Other residences have arrived since the opportunity to respond to it have been made and have not had this chance.
So the follow-up question, and I suppose it's a bit of a statement for clarification as well, because we're going to be in a difficult situation here, but are you aware that the structure plan consultation process, which resulted in the structure plan being adopted in 2012, which had generally these street-face interfaces, heights and overall height limits in that document, plus the C190 process from beginning to end, has resulted in a situation where now it would be deemed by any neutral person and certainly by the minister that a submission post-panel where the landowner has no right of reply creates a procedural fairness issue, which means that it would actually be inappropriate for us at this stage to canvass something that hasn't been broached in the panel report directly. Do you understand the difficulty we're in? Obviously, that was a bit more of a statement than a question, but I'd like to set that out right from the outset.
No, and I appreciate exactly what you're saying, but there's nothing more I can really add to that. My wife and I did make a presentation, but I must say it was in ignorance of the purple line, for example, which is in a one page of a 200-page document. But I'm here before you asking, and we're in good stead with a number of people who were not in that position.
No, thank you very much. It is difficult. Can I just follow up with one last question, which is a related question to our officers, and can we confirm that the purple and yellow lines, the streetscape and height interfaces that are proposed here are as were proposed in both the exhibition and the structure plan. Is that correct? Are they broadly consistent? Sorry.
In response to that question, through you, Chair, councillors, is that what I can say is that the methodology and how these were applied in both the draft and the final product are the same, and particularly how it is that the sensitive residential street frontages are applied in relation to the residentially zoned areas that are front the mixed-use zone areas, which this is not an example of that and hence has a different outcome.
Okay, thank you, Ian. Thank you. I understand where you're coming from, but what Councillor Leppard has indicated, it's the process we've gone through to this last stage and also looking at the built form of that section of Albemarle and directly opposite that section on the other side is a more commercial built form. So as a result, that's where the line stops there, because south of further to the other side, close to the Hardiman, built form is totally different. And you can see clearly facing Hardiman is all residential interface, so which then protects that direction. But going towards Macaulay Road is quite different. So I understand that, but the council's already taking a position in its own report that some things we are not quite agreeing with, which history says that if we don't adopt panel's recommendation and we send it to the minister, most likely gets sent back to us, minus our objections. So that's one of the difficulties here, you know, at this last stage of the process. Okay? Thank you.
Okay.
I would now call, let me see, Sotirios Katakouzinos. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, councillors. I represent VicTrac. I'm the planning manager at VicTrac. I hope you've had a chance to go through our submission. Basically, what we're saying is that what is proposed in the officer's report is inappropriate. The panel highlighted that what council is seeking to do is, to use the panel's wording, it is an approach which is wrong-headed. The council referred to earlier this evening about Metro Tunnel and the City Square and the opportunity there. If that was rezoned to transport, the council would then be objecting to it. In this case, VicTrac strongly objects to its land being rezoned to public park purposes for clearly the reasons that it put in its submission and which council is aware. If it wants to acquire the land, it has to do so through a public acquisition overlay. It can't just simply seek to rezone it. It would be procedurally inappropriate. And also, council needs to be aware that it has to actually put forward an argument why this land is needed for public park purposes. It can't simply say, oh, it's convenient, it's close to the Mooney Ponds Creek, it makes a good location, let's simply rezone it. It is very inappropriate to do that, and VicTrac reserves the right to take this matter further if the council adopts the officer recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sotirios. Any questions for the speaker? Councillor Watts.
Just curious about the last statement you made, reserves the right to take it further. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Yes, certainly. The role of VicTrac is to be the custodian on behalf of all Victorians of the assets that VicTrac looks after. And one of the reasons that it is placed as a custodian is that it is a self-funded entity and it puts what it receives from the various assets back into the transport system. So it has a broad role. Now, if VicTrac's assets are rezoned to a purpose which doesn't deliver on its transport purposes, and the public park zoning would effectively prohibit transport purposes, then it puts at jeopardy its role in delivering that outcome. So it would then have to rely on putting a submission to the government that what the council is seeking to do actually jeopardises its obligations under the Transport Integration Act and other legislation. So we'd be putting to the government that that role that it is chartered to deliver upon is actually at jeopardy by what the council is proposing to do. There are proper processes that need to be followed, and that includes if the council is interested in acquiring the land, the council puts to VicTrack that it is interested in acquiring the land. VicTrack then goes through a formal process where the land has to be declared surplus to transport requirements by the Minister for Transport and the Treasurer and the Minister for Finance. Thank you.
Thank you for that. You may take your seat, and I have a question for officers. You want to ask a question? Who wants to ask a question? No, no, no. Actually, I have a... Just one moment. Councillors still have a question for you.
Sotirios, in terms of the land that VicTrack owns along the Moonee Ponds Creek corridor, is it a sensible conversation that there should be some linear parks and open space usage of it, even if it's not zoned as such?
The conversation can occur without it being zoned. To zone it at this point in time is actually premature, because although I'm not privy to previous discussions about the future use of that land is actually quite strategic in terms of its transport suitability. And so for it to be declared surplus, there has to be a process that is followed. It would be premature at this stage, but it's certainly something that VicTrack is not close to looking at with council, but it is a stakeholder in the transport system. PTV, DEJA, Transport for Victoria now, they all have to be involved in the discussions, and by rezoning it public park would actually leap ahead of going through that process.
Could I ask Mr. Hicks the same question while we're on the same topic? Is that all right, yeah. Councillor Foster?
Okay, hang on. Just hold off that first. Do you have a question, Councillor Foster?
Thank you, Chair. I do. Borrowing the microphone again. I think we're on the same track here. I was just going to ask officers to respond to the submission, not so much the elaboration of questions, but to the Speaker's submission, if we could.
Yeah, I do have a similar question, because reading the submissions from the guide dogs as well, and looking at it from a perspective of what we're trying to do, C190, which is built form controls and a whole lot of other controls, and yet we have a specific rezoning in there, we have a PPRZ proposal. Who has? So can you clarify that whole thing for us, please, Ian?
Sorry, councillors, Chair. Yes, we have... So just to clarify, I met with the director of VicTrack in early June, I think it was. I can clarify that date on what we were proposing to do. And what I explained to the director, Ben Needham, at the time was that what we were proposing to do was that the draft amendment that went to panel had proposed a rezoning of the land for public purposes. As VicTrack are representing here, the panel did propose that be zoned to mixed use based on a submission of VicTrack. What we are proposing to you, councillors, in this amendment to proceed is that the land and the zoning of the VicTrack land stay as it currently is, which is Industrial 1. The reason for that is that it doesn't preempt anything that might need to occur in terms of the acquisition of that land for some future purpose by the state government. and it also doesn't undermine VicTrack's necessity to have that land available for transport-related purposes, which we assume, given its current status, was Industrial 1 zoning, that retaining that zoning doesn't undermine VicTrack's purposes at the same time. So that's the logic behind what actually exists in the amendment that's in front of you. The amendment in front of you does not rezone or propose to rezone the VicTrack land to public purposes.
So coming back to this, if I'm clarified, because reading the panel's report and their comments and the submissions, it was originally suggested in our draft version to rezone a PPRZ.
Correct.
Which then the panel says, no, you go to MUZ, which we don't agree with, and no one seems to agree with, so we're saying leave it back at INZ.
Correct.
Okay, clear? Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. He may take your seat now.
Thank you.
All right. Fine. I next call on John Widmer. John, you have 3 minutes.
Document?
No. I do not wish to speak about this document, and I want to make it clear that I don't care whether 100,000 people live along the creek. I don't care about what the shape of the buildings would be. I'm not bothered by that. What I am bothered about, and maybe it's the maths teacher coming out of me, 35 years of teaching and correcting children's and postgraduate work, what I do care about is that the population maximum or capacity figures are not credible and cannot be discerned by any method and can only be established by guessing. You'll notice that the top of the document I've just handed out is guessing, estimating and extrapolating. Now, it could be that the population of the C190 changes, because it is about densification, is it not? It is about putting more people. Mr. Main, I've heard you speak about this previously, Councillor Main, about not going out to Tarneit. I actually teach at Werribee, and we're an awful lot of students coming in from that area. The population is expanding. What does concern me is that we cannot plan if we don't have a capacity figure. And if the capacity figure is doubtful, then what we've seen is a repeat of what we've already seen, that the whole planning process is doubtful for this particular vexed area. Now, I won't go into the detail of it, and I'm going to stick pretty closely to the time, but for a number of things you could pick out. It has been, of the area that's been rezoned, the only way you can come to the published figures. Now, you either publish figures or you do not. The only way you can come to the published figures are to exclude 33% of the area, to say that these people will not build in this area. Another example, and there's a series of them in the document, I'm sorry, and I appreciate that some councillors have seen this. Another thing is that that people will not build to the boundary. Now, every bit of evidence I've seen, and I've lived in Kensington for 35 years, people, when they get rezoning applications, are building to the boundary. They're occupying the entire site, and that's why we have gardens on the top of buildings now, the vertical building. And it's vitally important that you know what you're voting for. And if you think you're voting for the published figures, I suggest that you ask some more questions, and I'm happy to answer them at some future stage. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, John. Councillor Main has a question for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, John, we did hear from the state government earlier today about the Arden urban renewal area, and the comment was made that don't overstate the residential. It's very commercial, university, knowledge industries. So are you perhaps assuming there's too much residential here in coming up with your residential numbers and perhaps underestimating the amount of commercial mixed use, other uses apart from residential? This is a
Councillor Mann, I don't have any views about it at all, quite frankly. I'm at the end of my professional career as a school teacher. I'm very disappointing, I'm afraid to say, but I could move anywhere. I could afford to move anywhere. I have no particular love of Kensington. I live here for lots of curious reasons. I don't have any view about that. My only view, since I've been presenting, and I've been presenting at Future Melbourne meetings since 2012, right, because I first looked at the figures and thought, where does the 20,000 come from? As a maths teacher, I'm not interested in the answer that the child gives me. I'm interested in how they arrived at the figure. And the methodologies, if you go property by property, and if they build to these heights, and we can use the 2011 census, and you can see the areas in around Kavanagh Street where there's 400 people in a building, 400 residents in a building, and they're going up along Kavanagh Street, 400 at a time, then we need to be thinking about the numbers of people that live in the area and be perhaps slightly less fussed about the shape of the building or knowledge precinct or whatever. Does that help? Thank you.
Thank you, John. I take that. I assume you have done some formula calculations. There's a spreadsheet somewhere that works all these out for you.
Sorry, I didn't hear
that. You have a spreadsheet somewhere that works all that out?
The support for the statement?
We'll come to that next time.
Okay.
Thank you, John. You may.
Thank you, and I think they might have been expecting this because, John, your submission was very similar to the question I'm about to ask. Sorry, but it will be of officers. Thanks, John. Ian, there has been an update in the population figures and the employment figures for the entire Arden-Macaulay area, and you provided a breakdown between Macaulay and Arden, I believe, in the attachment. Are you able to step out for us in a bit more detail when that update was made and why, and step out a bit more of the methodology about how we have arrived at these figures, please?
Yes, I can, councillors. Essentially, there are a couple of... There's a level of analysis to start with that would need to go into these population figures, and it has gone into these population figures. That does include taking into account the built form controls. I acknowledge what the speaker before me said, but I disagree with the idea that once renewal is generated in Arden-Macaulay that everyone will be building to the boundary and building masses and filling up those lands with building envelope. Actually, part of the built form controls that we have is actually to strongly resist that occurring, and that does have a significant impact. So making those sorts of assumptions have a significant impact on what you would arrive at as a population figure. What I can indicate to you, councillors, is that through our research department and using the estimated yield based on the built form controls that I've just alluded to and based on the height controls that are in C190, is that in the projections for the Arden-Macaulay structure plan, this was the piece of work that Council did in 2012, the employment projections for 2040 at that stage were 20,500, and the residential population expectation for the entire Arden-Macaulay area, not just the C190 area, the entire Arden-Macaulay area, is 22,500 as a residential population. What I can also indicate is that the state government, in some work that they have provided us, has done some figures going out to 2051, so that's a different time frame to the Arden-Macaulay structure plan. The employment figures that are forecast at that stage were 43,500. This is taking in the entire Arden-Macaulay area. I keep repeating that because the development of Arden Central and what the state government may have in train and in view for that, which will be the subject of much consultation yet to come, is very important in these figures. And the residential population estimated by the state government by 2051 is about 25,000. The final thing I will say about all of these figures, councillors, is that we are a good 30 years out, and these are forecast figures, and they are. But what I will say is that they are based on the best analysis that we have at hand at the moment, and they are also based on, in terms of our figures in particular, an analysis of the built form controls that are proposed to be put in place. And so it isn't right to say that every block is built to a boundary builders amass to a height that is not actually the purpose of having the controls is quite a different purpose to limit that kind of construction.
Thank you. Mr. Hicks, thank you for your comments. I think in many ways here we don't have a debate between ourselves and submitters because everyone's to have a different view, so I'll take that on board. Kay Oddy. Kay, you have 3 minutes. You're next. Yes.
Like others, I've got many concerns about the amendment, but there's just, and others will mention them, but there's one specific issue I'd like to draw to your attention. And this is the block with Shield Street, the residential interface, and Macaulay Road, which is a renewal street. And what I think has been missed is this whole block which runs between Shield straight through to Macaulay. And we have a discrepancy there. Well, as I said, that's established residential and this is the urban renewal. So the next slide will... Can I have the next slide or do I push it? So this shows the situation. Is Shield Street residential interface, the controls as presently proposed, 3 storeys at the front, 10 metre setback, visually recessive and the maximum building height is 12 storeys. Over on Macaulay Road, we have a maximum height, street frontage of 6 storeys. Then with prescribed setbacks, you get to a 12-storey maximum. However, we have a slope, 10 to 12 metres down here. And if the developer decides to use a Shield Street residence address, then the building will go along here, all right? So that in actual fact, the Macaulay Road section will not be 12 storeys, but it would be up 15 to 16 storeys. And I don't think the panel picked it up, and I don't think council picked it up, but I think we have a big issue. 12 storeys certainly, I think, does not, with a 10 metre setback, does not interface with residential according to the objectives in the amendment, and you can read them yourself. And then we have this discrepancy down here of outside the guidelines totally. So on the third slide, the important points I'd like to make is that this area that I just showed you is a transition area between an established residential neighbourhood and an urban renewal area. Allowing a maximum building height of 12 storeys on Shield Street with only a 10 metre setback does not satisfy the key C190 design objectives, which steps down and it respects the area. And then I believe a more appropriate maximum building height would be 6 storeys at the residential Shield Street interface and 9 storeys at Macaulay Road. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kay. Councillor Lappert, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Kay, for writing to us early. I have actually had a chance to discuss this with officers today, but haven't had a chance to get back to you prior to the meeting, so I apologise for that. But can we address this issue, please? Can I ask Emma or whoever is, or Ian, or whoever's presenting on this issue to discuss the issue that's been raised? Thank you.
Kay, you may take your seat.
Sorry.
Yeah, Kay. Yeah, you can sit.
I beg your pardon, Kay. It was for Ian. I'm so sorry.
I was wondering if we could borrow Kay's image, though, because that might be actually helpful. Councillors, these are masses of papers and documents and a little bit... complex. I do want to just provide some advice, which is to say that the way in which the height will be calculated is very important here, and its relationship to other provisions in the Victorian planning provisions, which is what I mean by wading through lots of documents to have that figured out. So the topic here is that this site here, as I understand it, is one site, and I think we're all familiar with the slope of this site. But the way in which the height will be determined here is through reference to the Victorian planning provisions, and particular two references. One's about building height that states that the vertical distance from natural ground level to the roof or the parapet at any point. So the way in which the height will be determined is from ground level to the parapet or the roof of any structure at any point, which would be given its lowest point. The other part that needs to be read in conjunction is that ground level is the natural level of a site at any point. So what that means is that the natural level at this site at any point to get to the 12 will in fact be the highest level of that site, not the lowest. So what the panel has taken into account is the fact that you will be starting in terms of thinking about the natural height of this ground level at its highest point and measuring from there to the highest point or the lowest point of the sort of parapet or the roof. And we're very confident and understand, as I'm informed, that that won't go beyond the 12 storey that is prescribed in C190.
So just a couple of follow-up questions. Thank you for that response. Is it possible, Ian, that it can be argued by an applicant, say, that the natural ground level isn't where the ground level is at that point in time, but you need to anticipate where the slope was once upon a time, and actually that means that the natural ground level is higher than the ground level at the point of application. Is that a threat?
So you're really asking what was the definition of natural ground level?
That's one issue. So let me give you both issues so that you can reply, and I know that we're getting a bit technical now, so I'll try and do it as quickly as possible. Yeah. The reason I think that the response might sound incredulous to some submitters is that to date, of course, we've had a few applications where the height has been measured from the Shiel Street frontage, and there's been quite an overdevelopment as far as the council has been concerned with that sensitive interface to the stable area to the north. I'm trying to go to how confident you are that these rules, once approved by the minister, if they were to be approved by the minister, would ensure that the responsible authority or VCAT would be measuring the height of the building from the natural ground level. And then the second question is, are we confident we know the definition of natural ground level?
Yeah. We've spoken to our Stat Planning Department about this particular topic, so those who consider the applications that come in. And so on that basis, the advice I've given you, I feel confident about. What I would say through your Chair and Councillors is that should FMC seek to endorse the amendment in some form tonight, that we would certainly be in a position to answer those questions even more thoroughly prior to Council, should it wish to, adopting the amendment. And we would undertake to do that in order to answer those questions very precisely and clearly.
Thank you, Mr. Higgs. We've got a few more speakers. Wilkie, didn't you wish to speak? Fine. I'll take 2 minutes off. Annette Hookie. Annette, you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Now, I appreciate that councillors must feel like this amendment has been going on for far too long and it's time to adopt it. But the proceedings we've heard already tonight are evidence that it's not ready. And just because there's been a lot of period of time spent on C190 structure plan does not mean that it is now ready to go. The panel report also backs this up substantially. Key points from the panel report I've paraphrased for you above. The C190 area needs to be treated differently from other urban renewals areas in the City of Melbourne. It is not an extension of the CBD, and the panel was careful to point out this, that because many of the property owners in the same hearing were pushing for much more aggressive heights, and therefore to hear staff, and even in the example just given, 12 levels of building height should be an exceptional outcome, not the predominant outcome in this Arden-Macaulay precinct. The other key issue that Council's brought up into this new revised version, which I might add was only released to the public, residents and stakeholders last Thursday, and the panel report was delivered last October 2015. So the other thing that was been brought in was there's a new idea that a residential interface between a mixed-use zone and a residential zone should be handled by ResCode. I think this has been recommended by panel, but not without enough research of the actual circumstances, and Council has simply adopted that. So I sense there's a lot of just pushing this through, and my fear is that we, the residents and the stakeholders of this area, will be without a really reliable, clear document. This point was made over and over by the panel. I've demonstrated to you the points that they were not satisfied with. They rewrote the entire Arden-Macaulay structure plan documentation. Plans were changed. This is why people such as the Hardiman Street folks are perhaps just waking up that things have changed. Now, I think that does demand another period of time to formalise three things, a Moonee Ponds Creek master plan and negotiations, concrete negotiations, tangible steps to do something about what has been promised in the structure plan as new parks and a corridor of recreation. The ResCode issue also needs to be further looked into. And the other area that needs work is to communicate this back, these changes back to the community who would not have been notified of this massive rewrite of Sewer 90.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Councillors? Our next call on Rob McGoran. Call Rob McGoran to present. You have 3 minutes, Rob.
Thank you. I'd just like to start by saying I'm representing PACE Developments here, and I'm acting as a director of MGS Architects in this matter, and nothing to do with any earlier matters that were before the council this evening. If I could just go to the next slide, thank you. The reason for this late submission is the recent acquisition of firstly the site on Racecourse Road by PDG Developments, and then a partnership agreement with the adjoining neighbour to Alfred Street. These sites that sit right at the apex of the on-ramp onto the south direction of the freeway there create a site of 13,000 square metres, one of the largest sites in the whole precinct, at the intersection of the modal interchange of tram, bike path and train at Flemington Bridge Station, in a context where there is, and maybe we can go to the next slide, in the context too, so here is a composite site, in the context of a tall built environment in the immediate environs, and in a context too where since the structure plan was produced, we've had the commitment of the state government to the metro and the funding of the metro. And more specifically, we've had this development of C270 for the city and this greater dialogue about how do we have the ability to better ensure that we can provide the sorts of moves in areas and incentivise the right outcomes for sites, affordable housing, pedestrian links, community infrastructure into developments. At the moment, the site it has two different zonings, a commercial one as proposed, which is fine, to the Racecourse Road, mixed use to the hinterland, again fine. But the Racecourse Road says the 9-storey preferred, a 12-storey mandatory, irrespective of any of those other moves. So the ability to negotiate to move development potential from one area of the site and put it to another, to incentivise affordable housing provision right next to public transport and in an area where we want to get those sorts of initiatives, is lost to council. So the proposal that I would like to put is that sites of this dimension, and perhaps not only this site, there should be the potential to have strategic development sites within the plan, number one, and that there should be within the DDO the opportunity to consider strategic development sites and the potential for different height outcomes subject to a net community benefit. So that is simply the proposition, that it shouldn't, that this sort of site in this sort of location, at the edge of the precinct, in a location characterised by taller buildings, as you can see, is not one where 9 storeys, which is about the equivalent of the height of the top of the tube, yields any quality in terms of outcome, given the juxtapositions, and nor does 12-storey. An alternative proposition, a mixture of lower and higher, might be, in fact, a much better result if it incorporated those other things that council would want in this precinct. And the plan, in my view, and the position we're putting to council, with 2 small insertions of strategic development site as not covered by mandatory height provisions, would give council the future flexibility to consider the merits of a proposal. Not to necessarily agree, but at least consider in a way that the current plan doesn't allow.
Thank you, Rob. Councillor Leppard, you have a question? You have a question for the Speaker?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair, and thank you. Other side of the same coin to the comments, I suppose, that were made in after the first submission. I understand that this issue was, though, discussed a little bit at the panel, if not by yourself, certainly by other landowners in that area. I think it's now Area 6 or 7.
7.
Area
7.
However, do you accept that the process as it's unfolded has been that the height limit in this area is 23 metres, then it changed to 28, the panel's come back, it's now 30, but or 6 storeys, I think, is we've changed from metres to storeys. Nine and 12, whatever it is, I'm getting very tired. However, you accept that where the panel and the council have landed is that the preferred height limit is what it is, and then in order to get the maximum height limit, there needs to be a demonstrable community benefit, and that is when affordable housing, childcare comes into the mix. Beyond that, of course, there's opportunities to argue straight to the minister that you've got the mother of all opportunities, do an incorporated document, but do you accept that for the same reasons that it's difficult for us to entertain last-minute changes that haven't been adequately heard, and so there are procedural fairness issues that come into play by putting downward pressure on the property rights of a property owner in one area. We can't, by the same token, change the property rights and increase the property rights of a landowner in another area without raising the exact same procedural fairness questions.
Look, it's a reasonable question to ask. I suppose none of the parties had available to them the consideration of a 13,000 square metre site at the immediate gateway to this precinct and at the Flemington Bridge interchange. So I think that's the fundamental issue, and what I'm arguing for here is really that on any criteria, that would be a strategic development site. On any criteria across Melbourne, that would be a strategic development site. And that council should have the opportunity to assess the merits of flexibility on that, because that's in fact what you're seeking to do for the whole central city with the C270 amendment, you know, and the minister is. And it is about only that point you raise is a reasonable one. The standard would have to be over and above what is set for the broader structure plan about uplift between the preferred and the maximum. But it seems to me this is a site that actually could provide links between the school and the public transport, for example. We're working with the developer on other sites, there is an appetite for affordable housing. Effectively, the provision in its current form and in its blunt form will eliminate that opportunity, in my view. And I think that's a really, just as an urban planner, I think that's a really unfortunate outcome. So I'm just wanting to see if there is any opportunity for the council to cut themselves some slack here to consider things that absolutely make sense if the proposition's right, you know, understanding absolutely what you've said, but cut themselves some slack, that's all.
Thank you for that, Rob. I think Councillor Leppard raised a very important point, that, and also others have raised this. Process has gone through a long time, and we are constantly asked to keep changing. I remember C-162, when we were doing MSS, we went through about 4 iterations because we called it quits and said we either adopt it or we just give up on the process. And we are now 6 years almost on this thing. So last-minute changes are always difficult. Jeff Leach, you here tonight? Nope. That's the last speaker. Thank you, all speakers, and all the questions and answers.
Chair, sorry if I may interject. Could I ask a final question of officers just before
sure, we go ahead. Ahead?
Thanks very much. Sorry, Ian, to make you work for your overtime tonight. Without foreshadowing anything at this stage, I just wanted to ask you, we've received a number of submissions tonight, many of which I think may require further consideration by us and perhaps even some more information in relation to those. What would be, hypothetically, of course, what would be the consequences if the committee elected to defer the item for 2 weeks tonight?
Through you, Chair, councillors, any decision of FMC tonight would only, as far as I understand it, be to endorse the document for recommendation to council. So I would answer that question by saying two things. One, if the committee tonight decided to do that, it may do so and also seek further information prior to council actually adopting C-190. Or, of course, there would be the alternative that you've just put forward, Councillor Foster, as well. But I think both alternatives provide time for council to receive any additional information that it may require.
Just while you're there, through you, Chair, would that interrupt your process in any way and any deliberations that you need to undertake?
Through you, Chair, that's a good question. In short, yes, if it was that FMC was to endorse this tonight, potentially seek management or officers to get further information or whatever that may be. Clearly between now and council there is more time than if that was done on the 16th of August, which would be the next FMC. Then of course the time between that and the next council would be much shorter, and it will just mean we have less time to do that work.
And just for your information, Councillor Foster and my fellow councillors, due to my personal circumstances, I may not be here for the 16th, which would mean you have no quorum. I purposely came tonight to make sure we had quorum. All right. On that note, where are we? I'll move the recommendation that's on the screen. I call the councillor seconded.
I'll second that.
Councillor Mayne seconded. I understand that this process has been quite tedious, and as the chair planning on this one and at the end stage of MSS 162 and also C-171 for South Bank, these processes are never simple. We cannot or we are unable to be able to say to everyone that every single expectation requirement can be fulfilled and met while the city is also trying to achieve some strategic objectives going forward. Back then when we did the C190, when we started at around the same time while we were doing the MSS, I think everyone agreed that there are some parts of this area should be the area defined for renewal. And then through that process, we also got a lot of feedback, and there are other parts of the area in Kensington that we should preserve. And as such, the C190 scope became a lot sharper so that we can make sure the residential areas, especially north or west of the railway line, we're protected as much as we can. We also know that the frontage of Macaulay Road, there has already been developments over the past that we need to bring some control into that. And then we also look at Boundary Road West, which I recall in the early stages of the meetings on 190, that generally most of the people were happy for developments to be concentrated there in the sense that there's no real interface issues with existing residential. With the freeway in the middle and the Mooney Ponds Creek, of course, but there was a lot of requirement to try to preserve and further develop Mooney Ponds Creek. So the strategic objectives that council tried to achieve, taking in on board a lot of the various inputs, including some which the panel had a big go at us, you know, because, over the process we said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, let's put it in and see if we can get it passed. Knowing that I understand from the presentation of VicTrack, now if I'm a private owner of a block of land like certain people in Sutton Street and in Alfred Street and even the most recent one with Rob McGoran's presentation, that council decided to suddenly zone 16,000 square meters as PPRZ, Mr. Wardlaw, that would raise some hell. So I can see issues with that approach. And when I listen to the speakers saying they need to take it further, and I can also understand that because when we did the heritage here on the Sutton Street and ended up in the Supreme Court, even though we won, but it reminds me of the fact that every time we do something, there are going to be challenges from different ends. Where we have landed, and I understand that management has disagreed on some points with the panel. I tremble to think that when it goes to the minister going to have a go at us, say, so why do you think you have a better reason than a panel? And we have been down that path a number of times, and sometimes we get through and sometimes we don't. So let's see how we go on that one. And I think it's important that in the management report is that we will have to work with VicTrack. And now that we've decided not to change that, we'll have to work at VicTrack. And I also read that the Guide Dogs Society were concerned that they might get excluded from it if we change the zoning. So, and they are a good organization that used the space to train guide dogs, which is a necessary community benefit. So looking at all of that, and I understand that some of my fellow councillors want to make further changes to it, I am inclined to say that we got to this stage, the officers have put a report and the responses. Let's take it forward and instead of keep tinkering with it. And if there's a need to finalize certain things before council at the end of the month and some more detail, I think officers will use their intelligence to do that. No, but I don't really think we should just keep on delaying this. Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Councillor. I'm certainly not up for abandoning this process at this point because we're worried about some of the outcomes, all the possibilities, all the risks. It's been a very long process and we've had submissions this evening saying scale it back to densify. And so in these types of situations, my view is let's support the officers. I think the officers are proposing to chart a sensible middle ground. And I think, as Councillor Ong did just state, we do have the backstop of council. We're just advising. This committee is just sending it off to council. All the submissions will be on the website, all the written submissions. All the audio is on the website. So we will have more than 3 weeks to assess all of that, to reflect on it. And so I don't think that getting into very detailed alternative motions, which probably wouldn't succeed if there was a full 11 councillors here, but with a changed, with a slightly changed complexion due to a conflict, I'm nervous about the council going in different directions as a result of the reduced voting situation tonight. I'm concerned about that tonight, where we've only seen the proposed alternatives today. I need more time to reflect, and we all will have time to reflect over the next 3 or 4 weeks before the council meeting. But let's just support the officers tonight and kick this forward, not raise the possibility of abandonment and not overreach. I was struck by the strength of the panel's commentary about the VicTrack land and from Sotirios's submission tonight that I do think that it is a bit of an overreach to be looking for a rezone ahead of a possible land transaction. And I like the officer formula, which is to request the minister identify and secure open space along the Mooney Ponds Creek, you know, for future recreational purposes. But it's not going in and saying, and let's rezone to dramatically reduce their value against their wishes, which is a massive property rights question for me and procedural fairness question, I suspect, with very little precedent. So I like the officer's words. It is very bold, calling for a 20 part 4 on developer contributions. I mean, this is not, you know, the officers just falling over and giving developers everything they want. I mean, there's we've seen from Vision Australia objections about procedural fairness around a developer contribution regime, and if we support the officer recommendation, we are putting that up, which is quite a strong position, and we're putting up identifying Mooney Ponds Creek in addition to the independent panel's expert report, which they've come to after a very lengthy period of time with a lot of submissions, and they are experts in the field. And I think the panel has largely got the balance right, and our officers have also been quite bold in their response, but it's an appropriate boldness, and I don't think we should be further emboldened tonight politically on what our planning experts are recommending that we do to kick this forward to the August council meeting as proposed by the officers.
I ask any speakers against the motion. Councillor Lippert.
Thank you, Chair. I too would like to respect the work of the planning experts that we have here and not tinker with the recommendation to adopt the amendment in the form that's been presented to us by management. However, I have worked up another motion in consultation with our planning experts, which I believe that they are in a position to not oppose, even though their recommendation is their recommendation. And so I will be foreshadowing another motion, but I will explain what that is at the end of the process. But let me make it very, very clear from the outset that I am not seeking to tinker with the amendment in the form that it's been presented to this panel, and I'm not seeking to undermine the work of our expert planners at the City of Melbourne. But if this is my only chance to address the issues before us, if we don't get to that other item, let me step through the issues. I think it's fair to say that I've been waiting 4 years for this debate. C190 was a key reason why I stood for election. The consultation process on C190 back in the day, I believe, led a lot to be desired, and I've been very upfront about that. That doesn't undermine the quality of the work that our branch has expertly put together. However, I believe that the communities of Kensington and North Melbourne have not always been fully understanding of what's going on, and that is a fault of the council, but here we are. Can I thank all the submitters tonight? Some haven't spoken. The Kensington Association quite significantly has supported what council has tried to do with some of the amendments in C190 in adjudicating some of the panel's recommendations. They've put together a very, very helpful list of which panel recommendations and management outcomes they support and don't support, and I thank them for all of that work. Their threshold issues are open space. Basically, don't adopt this unless you've got a clear plan for getting open space. I agree with that. And they lament, and thank you for doing this, Kensington Association, they lament that the panel knocked back my very sensible amendment to have the Macaulay Road streetscapes rise up to 3 stories rather than 6 stories, and the panel rudely knocked that back. But look, I'm not trying to put that back in now. It's too late at the end of the day, but I am very annoyed that the panel did land at that position. Thanks, Jeff Leach, for your submission as well. I know he's not here. Unfortunately, what you've proposed for Arden Central is out of scope, but perhaps that can be considered in future. John Widmer, I completely agree with. I asked for a detailed account of population projections and the methodology behind them to be presented to this committee. That was difficult for a whole lot of reasons. I don't write the reports, and so I can't own what's come back. I can only take on trust that the change in population projections that's been reported to this committee for the Macaulay and the Arden sections of Arden Macaulay are correct. I've had an opportunity to look at information that has not been disclosed publicly, which suggests what that methodology is and some of the areas that have been tested to get to that population outcome. And it's a very difficult position now because that hasn't been shared with the public. However, I am in a position to take on trust the new figures that have been provided in this report. Just as an example, the Shiel, Macaulay, Haynes section of C190, which I believe has probably been the most controversial area of development since the 2012 decision to exhibit C190, has seen a population reality of more than 3 times more what was projected for that area. I've really looked into that area, into those case studies very, very closely, and believe that we do have a bit of an anomaly in that area, and that we're not looking at a population projection of 3 times more than our projections across the board, but that the Shiel, Haynes, Macaulay area is a particular problem for us. And then, of course, to Rob McGoran and the Albemarle residents, for the procedural fairness reasons that I've set out, it is incredibly difficult for us post-panel to introduce new issues. I would love to be able to be in position to help the Albemarle residents and to be in a position here to broker an outcome with the landowner. The landowner's not here. It would be absolutely inappropriate for us to do that, and I can only sense your frustration in me saying that, but it would not be appropriate for this committee at this stage, 5 years after the process began, at 5 minutes to midnight, if you like, to reduce the property rights of an owner who was engaged in the panel process in good faith. The same goes for those large strategic sites in areas 6 and 7. If there's an overwhelming case to be made for a spectacular development at the gateway to the city, which I think some of these sites certainly are, then that case could be made as a separate planning scheme amendment process with an incorporated document. In the meantime, the process that's been set out is a preferred height limit with a mandatory maximum height limit, and if you want the difference between the two, you provide a community benefit above and beyond. This is not an extension of the city, as the panel has reiterated, and the overwhelming scale and character that we'd like for this area is that 6 to 9 storey European-style apartments. You don't get that if you allow any large strategic sites to do what they want, provided that they provide a master plan that does spectacular things. That said, I'm sure there is a lot of capacity for those landowners in that area to do spectacular things, but there's many ways to get there. We shouldn't just be able to allow it as of right, so it's too late to knock that in here now. I've been very closely involved in this process right from the outset. This is probably the most dog-eared council document I've got, which is the Arden Macaulay Structure Plan. I'm also very conscious that we can't keep changing the built form proposals through C190 to completely vary what we've got in the structure plan. The structure plan has to be the guiding document for everything that we're deciding here. Some of the proposals that have been suggested now are so far away from what we've got proposed in the structure plan that they shouldn't, that they probably should really be out of order, to be honest. But look, this is a very complicated process, and I sense the frustration. We're not going to be making everyone happy no matter what we do. There are lots of problems. I've mentioned the Shiel, Haynes, Macaulay issue so far. I've mentioned the population changes. I've mentioned the uncertainty to land holders, and I think that the sheer length of time and the changes in the built form control proposals that have been imposed upon landholders has made life incredibly difficult for them. So this has been a very complicated process. I have to blame the state government for that a little bit. Of course, we had the East-West Link come and go. We've had Metro come and go. I mean, the strategic justification for new populations and jobs in this area have chopped and changed a lot because the state government has introduced or canned major transport projects. But the reason I'll be voting against this motion, and I'll be foreshadowing an alternative motion, and now might be a good time to scroll down, is not because I'm tinkering with the amendment as it's been presented to us. I believe that if all we do is the case that's been made out by the mover and seconder, which is to recommend that council adopt this amendment and then ask the minister nicely to also do a few things. One, find us a bit of land. Two, impose a development contributions scheme. And three, adopt the amendment in our form, not the panel's form. But we don't have any confidence that we are actually going to land in the position that we want. We run a spectacular risk of ending up with all of the built form controls in C190, but no plan to acquire public open space. The issue with VicTrack has to be resolved, but we cannot resolve it here in this room at this time. It is going to require a cabinet level or inter-ministerial discussion with senior management or councillors at the City of Melbourne, I don't know, to talk about what the best possible outcome is. We've had the farcical situation where we've been having 5 years of fights with VicTrack. We've spent thousands, if not tens of thousands, of ratepayers' funds on our side and taxpayers' funds on VicTrack's side, having barristers at fighting each other at panel. And this is government fighting government with the public's funds, and it's getting to that stage where it's quite unseemly. I know that there are very strong arguments on either side. I understand that VicTrack has a certain remit. It's a remit that we would like to overcome in this instance, but we have a remit as well, and that is that if we cannot find a serious plan to acquire new public open space in this precinct, then we cannot support the future populations that C190 will bring about. So that is the threshold issue for me. I can't, in good faith, be seen to adopt this amendment without knowing a little bit more from the highest political levels what the plan for actually acquiring new public open space in the area is. Now, if it's not what we would like, which is ultimately the acquiring of VicTrack land and turning it into a linear park and locking it down for future populations forevermore, but there is another proposal on the table, so be it. But the reason we can't consider the reason, therefore, we should not be adopting the motion before us and should be adopting the foreshadowed motion is that that allows managers to walk up to Spring Street and to have these discussions. We need to work with the Planning Minister. VicTrack works, obviously, with the Public Transport and Major Projects Minister. These discussions must be resolved at those highest political levels. Otherwise, we have got no confidence at all that we've got a planning scheme amendment that's coupled with a meaningful public space acquisition program. And without that, I believe that we shouldn't be adopting the amendment, because then those future populations will not have the amenity that the structure plan guarantees that they tries to guarantee that they would have. I've also tucked in the Area 6 and 7 heights issue as well to make sure that issue is very clearly set out to the Planning Minister. I'm not sure, I haven't been looking at what's been scrolling up and down, but I hope I've set out the justification for the foreshadowed motion, and on the reasons I've stated, I will be opposing this motion, and I encourage my colleagues to consider the foreshadowed motion.
Thank you, Councillor. Further speakers to the motion? Further speakers against the motion? On that note, I'll put the motion that's on the screen to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. All those against, raise your hands. I've got four against. The motion is defeated. Councillor Leppard, you'd like to move your amended motion?
So moved.
Any further debate on it? If not, I'll put it to the vote. I'll second it. Councillor Watts.
I'll keep this very brief here because I'm not sure yet if there is going to be speakers against and we need a discussion. I believe I've canvassed the reasons for this foreshadowed motion in the previous debate. This still will get us to a position where we can adopt amendment. Let me make that very clear. But what it does is it gives the whip hand to our management to go up to Spring Street and try and clarify absolutely, if we can come up with a plan for open space. The issues that VicTrack have raised are absolutely serious. If we can't resolve them and the planning minister ultimately says, bugger it, I'm just going to agree with the planning panel over the council, we cannot afford to acquire open space in this land. So I urge councillors to vote for this. We can still resolve this issue either at the August or September council meeting and land exactly where we wanted to land at the beginning of the day. But what this will do is it will give us much higher level of confidence that we have a plan to acquire public open space. Without it, I urge councillors to consider not proceeding with the amendment. It's a very important threshold issue.
Would the seconder like to speak to it?
Very briefly, Councillor Leppard has very comprehensively described our dilemma, and I'm speaking in favour of this. Obviously, I'm seconding it. The crux of the matter for me is this amendment allows the conversation with the various government departments and those making the decisions to be extended. No one is arguing that they're going to be successful, but if you don't ask, you don't get. And what I think is this is putting us in a position of where we can ask.
Thank you. Speakers against? I'll speak against this on a very short note. I hear what Councillor Leppard said. I see what's up there. The point, say 1.2.1, it's clearly stated in the panel report that we were a bit overreaching to try to rezone this and just take it. On response, well, you might not agree with it, but that's how I read it, okay? Management here will listen to what I say first. This is the point of this, no? What we do, we try, because there's a lot of things council wants to do. There's a lot of things we wish we could do. And there's a lot of times when we try that, we get sort of told, no, sorry, no, you're overreaching. So now we've agreed before that we come back to what it is, I and Z. We're not going MUZ, we're not going PPRZ, we're going sitting back at I and Z. And the panel's recommendation is that if you really want to do this, you know, you have to go and start negotiating. It's screened the report. We're going to have to start to negotiate. Or do we have to explicitly write out and say, go up there and negotiate? The reality is this, and I read the report, we can read a lot of things into it, or we can say, let's make it simple as ABC and make sure that everybody else writes it down in a detail so that the audience there knows that we're trying to say, this is what I mean by this particular paragraph. The report's very long, 190-odd pages, and you read through it, and you read through very different parts, and they make little changes here and there, and the built form controls, and the back lanes, and the sunlight, and all. And if I want to take issue, I could take issue with 30 or 40 of those comments. And others out there will take another issue with 30 or 40 comments. Where do we finish? We keep on making more changes to it. Let's tell officers go up there and have them, and because this gives a warm feeling, we have some confidence that it's very clear. Dealing with state government, it is never clear. It is never clear. And maybe, you know, we might be hopeful. But what I've said is, over the 5 years, we have managed to get to a point where the key issues have been addressed. Sure, open space is very important. The panel says clearly, do not put in specific open space in private land. Go and work it out and make it clearer later. I don't know, maybe we haven't done that. And we'll have to do that in the coming months and years. You know, because some of the super sites out there have recommended they're willing to give us 2,000 square meters here and other things. You know, that's something to be worked out. You know, and I always was reluctant in the early days when we plotted green spaces in there on private property. Then we said, no, we're not going to do a PAO, because PAO is a controversial thing. We start down the path, no, we'll be in all kinds of trench war after that. So we decided not to in those very early days. But we sort of implied that that's what we would like to do. So I'm voting against this change because I think, you know, there could be many, many different ways to approach this. And I think management have done a terrific job in going through it and responding to it and stating clearly what we need to do and what are the things we don't agree with. But now there's still work to be done. Speaking to the motion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Councillor Onk. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to state that I do support this amended motion, and I do so respectfully acknowledging the considerable work not only of our Chair of Planning, Councillor Ong, our Deputy Chair of Planning, Rohan Leppard. They've both obviously spent a considerable amount of time on this over many, many years. Obviously, the work of officers, I think, has been excellent to date, as well as many people in the room tonight. And I think that this motion isn't actually asking for any particular change. In fact, the first point is actually suggesting that recommending to council to endorse the plans as recommended by management, but it does pull out some of the key points that I believe are deal breakers that we really do need to bring to the forefront, that whilst they might be acknowledged in the report, they have been reminded we've been reminded by submitters through our own analysis. I'm reminded of the consultation process before this council where I met with and spoke with many people in the room tonight and where they were dubious about some of the work, dubious about some of the the structure plan before them and how we're going to continue with the character that we know and love now and into the future if we don't have guaranteed open space or if we don't have developer contributions for the community spaces that we need, for the amenity that we need, for the livability that we like now. We need to have it in the future, and I believe that we do need to bring that to the forefront, that having that advice and having that discussion further at the council meeting I think is appropriate, and I believe that Councillor Leppard has put forward an amendment that is well considered and respectful of of all of the considerable work that has got us to here, the considerable angst that still exists in the community, but the you know, the need to get on and provide certainty for people that have been in it for a long time, and from a residential commercial landowner point of view, I think that it is a respectful and considered motion before us, and that's why I support this and why I don't support just wholeheartedly adopting the endorsement or recommending council to do so. And I thank Councillor Leppard for his work.
Further speakers either way? If not, Councillor Smain.
Just briefly, I will vote in favour of this amended motion, even though my sentiments are more with the planning chair. And I'll explain why. Is that I absolutely disagree with the, you know, give us the public open space or we'll abandon position. But that's what's been said orally. That's not what the motion says. So the motion simply says, go up to Spring Street and try and negotiate. And if by a miracle a cabinet subcommittee is formed and Premier, Treasurer, Finance Minister, Transport Minister all suddenly say, we're going to give you this beautiful corridor of land for not very much, or commit to it, then we would have support here to my left, potentially. I'm sceptical as to whether we will get something in writing, and certainly will not support abandonment, but am prepared to support trying, which is basically where we are. I'd be nervous about a 4-2 vote with a diminished number of councillors in the room and the questions about people talking about mandates. I think 5-1 will look better in terms of us going up to Spring Street and asking for that. But I think we have some serious questions to ask ourselves what we do at the council meeting. And for mine, the idea of abandoning just because you haven't got something absolutely locked down, when we have 19 million in our open space reserve, we have 10 million coming in a year at the moment, we have any number of policy options and levers to deal in open space in Ardon-Macaulay in the future, including talking to super sites and negotiating with them. This very hard negotiating position that we abandon unless we get what we want in a very unusual rezone, I can't support and won't support at the council meeting, but I will support the idea of asking and trying and giving a solid mandate to Councillor Leppard's attempt, which is a good attempt from an outcome point of view, For mine, it's just the question of the reality of it and what will come, which I'm very nervous about, what will come if we don't get the answer we want to hear from Spring Street.
The mover would like to close. Oh. Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Chair. I love Councillor Main's bold assertion that it will be a 5-1 vote tonight. On this occasion, however, yes, a reasonably safe bold assertion, Councillor Main. I'll speak in favour of the amendment. I don't want to repeat everything that's already been said. I think a summary may be in order, though. I think it's important that this does acknowledge much of what the community's been asking for. Perhaps not all on each and every occasion, but it does go a long way towards it. It does provide for a greater commitment from both ourselves, but certainly from the state government, to open space. And as we all know, God's not making any more real estate. It's important that what we do have in respect of open space is managed properly, is created where we can, albeit as opportunistically as sometimes that has to be. Leaves open, of course, the issue of the VicTrack land, a resolution relating to that. But I think most importantly, it allows for dialogue to continue and for our officers to be empowered with a firm council position to do that. Whether the vote is unanimous or not, it will hopefully be very shortly a council position. So I too thank Councillor Leppard for his work on this. I know how passionate he is about it, but I think that this lands us in a reasonably good place.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. I give the mover to close this debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues, for all of that. There's a little bit to respond to, but won't take me too long. So thank you for what's been a very complicated debate. I did not move anything in anticipation of who would be here and who would not be here. I certainly don't land with political positions anticipating whether or not certain councillors are conflicted. So I just want to make that very clear that this is what I've been working on for many months, and I did not know until very, very recently what the likely makeup of the council would be. But I always go for what I believe is the best policy outcome rather than anything else. Secondly, Councillor Main, you've mentioned that there was difference between some of my oral arguments as opposed to what is said in the foreshadowed motion which we're debating here now. That is very true. Perhaps I've used the word abandon slightly incorrectly. Abandon has a very definite meaning under the Act, and I would like to not be in a position where we abandon it at all. We're not saying here that unless the Minister provides us with free open space that we're definitely going to abandon it. That's certainly not the intention of the motion, and I can give you my commitment that that's not where I'd like to land either. Obviously, I'd like the amendment to be adopted in the form that management has recommended to us here, which we are now recommending the council ultimately adopt, but there are certain things that need to be canvassed properly first. I believe that the interim public, the interim development contribution scheme is actually a very, very high likelihood because of the fantastic work that our officers have been doing with the MPA and the entire cross section of agencies that have been working on that. So I don't think that's particularly under threat. But for example, if the Minister comes back and says, well, I'm not going to side with the panel, but I am going to side with the Council over the Industrial One zoning for the VicTrack land, and that issue is resolved and that's the outcome, and we can afford to acquire that land, well, then there is a plan, and then I think we're in a position to proceed with the amendment, for example. Finally, let me just clarify that 1.2.1 is in the context of 1.2. So what I'm complaining about in 1.2.1 is that if the panel's recommendation were to be adopted, and remember that the panel recommends rezoning the Moonee Ponds Creek land to mixed-use zone, then what we are in a situation with is that we cannot afford that land, even if we were in a position to acquire it, even if the Minister did agree to do a swap or something like that. It would make it unaffordable for any level of government to make it a priority. If we land where management wants us to land, which is industrial land plus a plan with VicTrack and the appropriate Minister to hand that land over to public use, then we're in a good position, I think. Finally, I just want to reiterate that there are no changes to the management recommended planning scheme amendment here. I know that that's been argued that what I'm doing here is making changes to the management recommended planning scheme amendment. I just want to reiterate that I've proposed no changes. This is only about maximising management's negotiating position between now and when council finally adopts the amendment, so that we are not risking the entire premise of the Arden Macaulay structure plan, which is adequate public open space for future generations.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. I put it to the vote. All those in favour of the amended motion? Councillor Main, Councillor Leppert, Councillor Oak, Councillor Watson, Councillor Foster. All those against? Councillor Ong. It's carried 5-1. I meant to hand this back to the Deputy Lord Mayor. She's here. So she can close the meeting.
This concludes the items of general business for consideration in the open session. Urgent business business must be not be omitted as urgent business unless it's related to a raised item matter which has arisen since distribution of the agenda and can not safely or conveniently be deferred until the next meeting. Are there any proposed items of urgent business? And the answer is no. So we shall continue. A 15-minute period will now be provided for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I now invite any questions from the members of the public. Please feel free to come forward.
Okay. I will leave now.
You will leave now?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. You did well. Would you please state your name, please, and you have just 90 seconds for the 15
My name
minutes.
Is Rilke Muir. I'm representing the Kensington Association. A number of residents have brought to our attention that people have been approached from, Sandbridge School, which apparently has a campus in Williamstown or Port Melbourne somewhere now, who claim that they're also going to open a school in Kensington. Has Council heard any rumour or fact to that? Because the Sandbridge people are saying that it's got Council approval and Council's all for it. And we hadn't heard anything about it and wondered whether you had.
Not to my knowledge. Can any Councillor help us, please?
Just to clarify, I believe that the council has the same, or those that have seen it, councillors would have the same information that members of the community would have seen, which is a flyer that is doing the rounds. I can confirm that, something on the Kensington Good Karma Network, Rilke, I can confirm that we have not been approached formally about the school. However, there have been ongoing approaches from the landowner, which I have been made to various councils. I don't know who has and has not responded to that, but I can undertake to ask our officers what approaches might have been made directly to them. Obviously, for a land use like this, there are various planning triggers planning permits that would be triggered, and so I'd be interested myself to know if there are any pre-application discussions. I'll look into it and get back to you.
Thank you. We're particularly concerned in regard to traffic.
Thank you very much. There was another question from the floor. Please come forward and state your name.
Hi, my name's Kate. I just wanted to confirm that there were 5 councillors that exited the meeting when C190 was brought up as a consequence of special interest in Allied Flour Mills. Is that right?
It was a donation. A declared donation from Allied Mills to the Team Doyle campaign, and there were 5 Team Doyle councillors here, and they did a submission into this, and so the Lord Mayor took some would argue conservative position, but it's been a fairly consistent position over the term that even with submissions it triggers a conflict, and then all 5 Team Doyle members leave. Strictly speaking, each should have said what the conflict was. But what the Lord Mayor said applied to all 5, and they've all filled in the appropriate forms, which will go on our register of conflicts, which we have on our website as well.
So the conflict of interest of all five councillors was the same with
Allied Flour
Mills?
It was the same. It was a donation to the Team Doyle campaign, of which they all ran under the same umbrella, so it picks up all of them.
When did that occur?
Before the last election, I think. I'm not sure, but it's not a recent donation, I don't think. It was
prior to the election. Then why wasn't it brought up earlier? You know, like in other meetings and hasn't been brought up?
Well, I think they probably hadn't done a submission at that point. I don't know.
Most certainly had done a submission. So that will be communicated on the website, the conflict of interest, and I presume that's
it goes on our... We have a register of conflicts, yeah. And it will appear on that, along with the stated reason in the form they've filled in. And Keith can probably answer that.
Sorry, Councillor. It will appear in the minutes of this meeting, so they will be up on the website, all things being equal, by tomorrow afternoon. So you'll see it there. The conflicts doesn't get updated until every quarter, but so it will be in the minutes.
So does that mean once they have conflict of interest, they have no
vote?
Input or vote into this?
Yeah,
correct.
That's right. Okay. So there's just six
that
of us.
That goes all the way back, not just since they've just had to fill in the form.
We're referring to the fact that, you know, if this donation was made prior to 2012, which is when this process began, why was it only just disclosed tonight that there are five members of the panel that have a conflict of interest with Allied Flour Mills? Because Allied Flour Mills features prominently in C190, as you would be aware, and they're very heavily protected in C190, as you would be aware also. So it does seem very strange to me that I'm sitting in a meeting that I've attended the bulk of these over the, as you've all mentioned, lengthy four-year process, that only now we're learning of a conflict of interest with five councillors with Allied Flour Mills, who feature heavily and are very well protected within C190.
They didn't get the heritage overlay. As soon as the original one was all mixed use, which a part of his residence, and all I spoke to all the other people in the area. We've got, like, right opposite Allied Flour Mills and Elizabeth Street, you've got 16 houses.
They're
small little houses, but they outnumbers actual factories and so forth. If you actually said, okay, the size of land allotment isn't the same, but outnumber the factories. You know, like, and they didn't get the heritage overlay, and they seem to bypass everything. And now it seems to be quite obvious the reason why, to me.
Well,
that's how I feel.
Perceptions and your interpretations are one thing, but I can say to you that the officers have obviously had the prime running on this, the professional planning officers, and individual councillors do not get into that level of detail, and the officers have made the running on that. So you haven't had conflicted councillors directing and determining outcomes in relation to Allied Mills.
That's what I see. You know, you imagine how I look at it. I just think, to me, it's corruption. It's a horrible word, but that's how it looks like.
Chair, can I just raise a point of order here? This is a question time, and because the most members of Team Doyle aren't in the room at this time, I believe that we're getting in a situation where we're speculating about the nature of a conflict when, rightly, the decision as to whether or not a council has a conflict is a decision of that councillor and not of the committee. So I think that in the sake of procedural fairness, we might have to wrap this one up here.
Yeah. But that's fine. I just would also like to confirm that if that information is going to be made public, then it is reportable also to the media. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. This is the media's here.
Great.
It'll,
good.
This audio will be on the website.
Thank you very much for the question. I wish to thank the members of the public for their interest and attendance and declare the open meeting closed at 8:29? 8:20? Thank you. Thank you for your attendance.